It is 6 o'clock, and it is the auspicious day of July 17th, a wonderful hay day, and we are here for a regular assembly meeting. I'm going to call the meeting to order and ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Warren Keough, District 1.
Present.
Noel Woods, District 2.
Present.
Ronald Arvin, District 3.
Here.
Steve Culligan, District 4.
Here.
Darcy Salmon, District 5.
Present.
Jim Culver, District 6.
Here.
Vern Halter, District 7. You do have a quorum, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We have the agenda before us. I've been asked to combine the first four public hearings. They're all the same volunteer fire assistance grant, so if there's no objection, that's the way we'll handle those. Is there anything else on the agenda? Is there any objection to the agenda? Is there anything on the consent agenda somebody would like to pull?
Oops, sorry. I think there's going to be some active discussion on the Hatcher Pass and whether if that needs to be pulled. I think Mr. Culver is going to make a change or a proposal.
Are you pulling it?
I'll pull it.
Which one is it?
Okay, we're pulling.
It's an ordinance.
It's an ordinance.
Forget all that, Ms. Mayor.
Yeah, it's going to have a official public hearing anyway. So there's no objection. We have the agenda before us, and this time we'll rise. I'm going to ask our local contractor, Mr. Dave Cruz, to lead us in the pledge.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have the minutes. We don't have any minutes. Assemblymember Culligan.
I was just wondering, is it possible to move the public testimony or open public comments ahead of the ordinance stuff tonight for any public serious comment?
Audience participation, I think, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. Well, is there objection to that?
So, audience participation.
The proposal is to move audience participation ahead of the public hearings. Well, the public hearings all have audience participation. We have them immediately before the consent agenda. Okay, is there objection to that?
I guess I would object if we're combining the first four public hearings. That leaves us only two or three. So,
so there's objection. Let's vote then. The question is whether to change the agenda to move audience participation up ahead of public hearings.
Sure.
Madam Clerk.
Assemblymember Culver. Assemblymember Culligan.
Yes.
Assemblymember Woods.
Yes.
Assemblymember Halter.
Yes.
Assemblymember Keough.
No.
Assemblymember Salmon.
Okay. Yes.
Assemblymember Arvin.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, passed with Assemblymember Keough opposed.
Okay. Now back to the agenda. There's no minutes. Do we have any cities here tonight? Please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly. Doug Griffin, City Manager, City of Palmer. I had your borough clerk pass out a report. I'll go over it really quickly. Just want to report on a few things that the City Council approved at its last meeting on July 10th. After a lot of work, we have revised our sales tax code. Hopefully, it's more business and user-friendly to try to reduce the number of filings for smaller taxpayers and dealing with people that come to town just sporadically, itinerant vendors that they don't have to report, give us a bunch of zero sales tax reports throughout the year and things like that, just try to get rid of unnecessary paperwork. So I think that will be an improvement. Those changes don't go into effect till January 1st. We have also approved a couple of really housekeeping amendments in terms of changes to our charter, things that are just really obsolete. One does away with reference to a magistrate's court, which has probably been obsolete since statehood. We're finally getting around to getting away with that because that's obviously handled by the state in the judicial system. And then also doing away with the something that in our charter that provides a time frame in which people have to file notice of damages resulting from an injury, which has been pretty much taken care of by a couple of Supreme Court decisions that are right on point. So that's just really housekeeping to get that obsolete language out of our charter. And then finally, we have accepted an initiative by petition that is going to appear on the October 2nd city ballot that will prohibit smoking in places of employment and public places. So that's our smoke-free ordinance. That's being put up before the voters based on a citizen initiative. So with that, and finally, I think the Mayor Johnson has provided you this evening a copy of support to upgrading the road access and building a transit center at Hatcher Pass. So I think that was maybe distributed to you through by the clerk from Mayor Johnson. That concludes my reports. My report. Happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Assemblymember Halter.
Financially with that Hatcher Pass building and road project?
I'm not prepared to answer that question right now.
So I do appreciate your letter.
Yes. Well, I think it would I think you could make an argument that the city of Palmer would benefit from that development, so you could you can always ask.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. City of Wasilla.
Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. I just want to thank the Assembly and Assembly Member Colligan for the first meeting we had today in reference to possibly a combined emergency center for all the cities and to include the borough. I think we're on the right path, and we support that. Second, I just give you an update on the July 4th celebration. This was our biggest year yet for the parade. We had over 1,200 participants in the parade and over 5,000 spectators. And next year promises to even be bigger. So that's my report, sir.
Thank you. Houston.
Jim Johansson, Deputy Mayor, City of Houston. First, I just want to, on behalf of the mayor and the council of City of Houston, we'd like to thank the borough for the grant for the Zero Lake parking and trailhead project, where it actually started today, and the Assembly Member Halter was there. Second on that, we'd like to let you guys know that we are now officially a Purple Heart City. We voted on that unanimously at our last meeting. And from the mayor herself, she wanted to make sure I understand the Moose Federation is in talks with the borough for their support for their endeavors, and the City of Houston would like to encourage the borough to help them out with that. Save the moose. That is all. Any questions for me?
Questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for hosting our joint mayor's meeting last week. It's a good time to get up to the big town of Houston. That's all of our cities. Is the school district wanting to speak? Since there isn't any school, I guess they may not have a report. Committee reports. Assemblymember Culver.
Yeah, yesterday the joint school district, school board, and assembly committee met. Unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of attendance. I think I was the only borough representative, and there was one school board member there, the superintendent, and a couple finance folks. The school, from the district. The district has a new budget officer. I believe his name was Luke, and he came from Kodiak. Seemed like a pretty up to speed on municipal and school district funding. You know, there, Mr. Mayor, being a former school board member, you understand that kind of institutional issue between our two entities, the district and the borough, and there's some unhappy campers over there. They feel that we're not doing a good enough job communicating with them on ongoing projects in the schools, what the schedule changes are, the issues. They're just kind of a little, have some trepidation that there may be some issues come up with school starting up, staffing. For instance, this building has a project going on, and they just, they need some better liaison efforts. And so one of the things that I suggested that we do on other projects is that we have a project website for, like, Hatcher Pass, for instance, and that the school district says we need to be able to answer questions that the public has concerning all these projects going on. We've got about four roofing projects. We've got several athletic fields going on. For instance, what's the status of the turf replacement at Palmer Highby? And they said that they would host the website and do the work to keep the website up. It's just they need student interns for that. It's just that the information needs to happen. So, you know, I've advised the manager of what the concerns were. And I kind of think we need somebody that's their responsibility to kind of communicate on a regular basis information back and forth. And that same vein, there's a number of small projects that were appropriated by the legislature that they're looking to quickly take action on. You know, the $20,000 and $40,000 grants for materials, technology grants, library books, those kinds of things. And what they would like to see is one fell swoop, we accept and appropriate that money and direct it for the district to be accountable to spend it rather than getting a reimbursement from the borough. So perhaps the manager can get with his finance people and their finance people, and they can have an administrative level meeting and see if we can streamline those smaller grants. So anyway, there were there's some issues that need to be ironed out, and I hope we can accommodate that. Nancy Cameron from Land Management was there, gave a good explanation of where we're at with all the school sites for the bond projects, and those are moving forward. They kind of feel like on these bond projects that they're not getting enough information. And I know our staff's working really hard and trying to put these things together. But they think that they live on the playing field, but they're on the sidelines. You know, they're in the schools and this activity's happening. They're getting asked the questions, what's happening with this project or the other? So I kind of think we just need to, again, have somebody that's designated as making sure that information is flowing back and forth. I know our public works director's, you know, overwhelmed with all the stuff going on, and they're, you know, it's the problem du jour that comes in the office, road maintenance issue or some issue that has to be dealt with. So they're not always available, have the time to make sure that all the detailed information is going out to the customers. So I think I've said enough on that, but I would hope that we can improve that situation.
Thank you. I can assure you the manager and I will be discussing that in the morning. there's at least one local contractor that when he's building a house, there's a new picture of that house every day, and the whole world can see it go up. You'd think we could do something like that. Assembly Public Relations, anybody? Assemblymember Colligan.
Yeah, I just had a brief comment. It was brought up a couple times earlier today. The manager and EMS director brought again. I just want to thank them for hosting a meeting with the stakeholders to talk about consolidated dispatch. It's obviously an engaging conversation with the stakeholders, but at the end of the day, I think the homework was for each of the stakeholders to come up with a list of items to work on a joint scope of work to get out to bid and hire a consultant to come in and interview and work with the borough and the individual groups, including the state troopers. But it was a hope that we have some meaningful discussion and get moving forward. But I just want to thank them publicly for corralling that today, and I think it went well.
Thank you. Anybody else? Mr. Manager, it's time for your comments.
Good evening. First, I'd like to introduce Kurt Parkin from the Donlin Gold Company, and he has a presentation for us on a really exciting project that kind of runs through the borough, but something that everybody likes would like to have more of.
I already like this setup. I don't have to look backward.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the Assembly. My name is Kurt Parkin. I'm the External Affairs Manager for Donlin Gold Project, and I appreciate the invitation to come and speak to you very briefly about what we think is a pretty exciting project, the Donlin Gold Project. So the project site is located about 250 miles west of here, 10 miles off the Kuskokwim River near the village of Crooked Creek. It's a 50-50 joint venture between Barrick Gold and Nova Gold. Barrick Gold is the largest gold mining company in the world. Nova Gold is the junior company. The resource lies on Calista Corporation lands. We have a lease with Calista as well as a lease with the Kuskokwim Corporation, which is the village corporation in that region that holds most of the surface rights, and the Calista Corporation holds some surface rights as well as the subsurface rights. We've been doing project studies and have been out in the area since 1995, just defining the resource, doing engineering studies and environmental baseline work, and have a considerable amount of environmental information that's been prepared for us. So when we go to permit, we'll have a clear understanding of the project. This is a photo of the project site, and that the mountain in the background is called Lewis Ridge, we call it, and that is essentially where the pit will be. It'll be an open pit mine. The life of the mine is expected to be over 27 years, and we expect to pull out 33 million ounces of gold. 59,000 tons per day of rock will be processed in the mill. The what we call the strip ratio is about 5.5 to 1. So for every 5.5 truckloads of rock that comes out of the pit, one will go into the mill, which will have ore in it. So it's a 5-to-1 strip ratio. About a little over 2 grams per ton is the how rich the ore is. We'll have two river ports with a 27-mile access road. So the lower river port will be in Bethel, where we will land material from ocean barges, and then we'll put that material on barges to go up to Kuskokwim to a port that's south of the Crooked Creek community, at which point it'll be transferred onto a road and taken up to camp. One of our biggest challenges, as you can imagine, for a project as large as this is power. And I'll talk a little bit in a minute about that, but we're going to have a power plant that is going to generate over the 157 megawatts of power that we need. And as you know, that's a lot, and probably is equivalent to what Fairbanks needs. We'll have a 5,000-foot runway to bring the crew in and out of camp, and we'll have a camp for 600 employees. Again, to address our power requirements, we had looked at a variety of sources of energy, including diesel and connection to the intertie, burning peat. We looked at it and decided that the best option for us was to put a pipeline, a 313-mile pipeline that ties into the Beluga fields and goes up, follows up, and I'll show you in a second a map that shows the routing, but it follows a good portion of the Iditarod Trail routing up to about Farewell and then heads west to go to the project site. It's going to be buried the entire route, with the exception of a couple of places where there are earthquake zones, and it'll be above ground for a very short period of time while it crosses those earthquake faults. We'll be doing horizontal directional drilling at a variety of water crossings in some of the geotechnically challenging areas so that we don't disturb the rivers and the streams. And aside from that, it'll be a standard trenching sort of project. There'll be manual check valves periodically along the route and a single compression station near the Beluga area. Our source of natural gas will just sort of depend on where we can get a good price for natural gas. Right now, we're expecting it'll probably be imported LNG. Construction is going to be done with temporary roads and crossings, and all of those, the construction infrastructure, the roads will all be reclaimed once we're done. A number of baseline studies have been done along the pipeline route. As you can see, wetlands, wildlife, geotechnical studies, the Iditarod Trail considerations, aquatic resources, and especially the spawning areas. Here's a map that shows the route. The pipeline itself is the yellow line, and then you'll see there's a green dotted line along a portion of it that shows the Iditarod Trail, and then the land status. The line will go principally across state land in the Mat-Su borough. I think it's entirely state land. And then there's a little bit of Siri Native Corporation land and then BLM land as it gets closer to the project site. Pipeline's going to be 14 inches in diameter and steel. We're expecting to use about 30 million cubic feet of natural gas for to meet our supply. This is just a photo of the Kenai Pipeline right-of-way that kind of illustrates what our right-of-way would look like once we are completed. Now to the project schedule. It's a pretty exciting time right now for us because our board just a week or so ago approved the application of our permits. And so beginning sometime either next week or the week after, we'll file our first permits with the Corps of Engineers. We expect that the permitting process will take 3 to 4 years and will be about 100 permits. The pipeline is big, the ports are big, the project site is big. They could all require an EIS on their own, but we decided to bundle it into a single project and single application. And so the expected the Corps of Engineers will be the lead agency for the NEPA process. EPA will be a cooperating agency. And then with the state of Alaska, the permits at the state, the Department of Natural Resources will be coordinating the permit process for the state through the Alaska Large Mine Permitting Team and the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office. Once the permits are in hand, the board will decide whether or not they want to go forward with construction. And if the answer is yes, it'll take about 3 to 4 years to do the construction. We're anticipating 3,000 construction jobs for the project during that period of time. And after construction, a 27-year life with 600 to 1,400 jobs during that period of time. It'll be at a camp, so we'll be transporting people in and out. We have a real good record over the last 17 years of local hire. We're pretty proud of the fact that we've hired locally, and we're committed to, in fact, we've had up to 90% Yukon-Kuskokwim area residents working up at the camp at a time. So we're going to be really committed to training programs and opportunities so that we can have local hire in the region. Some of the economic benefits. Over the last 5 years, the company's invested $256 million on some of the exploration work and the studies. The annual payroll during construction will be $375 million, and during the operations, averaging $97 million annually. Obviously, because it's on Chulista Native Corporation land, there will be royalties distributed through the 7I provisions, 7J provisions of ANCSA, as well as state mining licenses and corporate income taxes. So, Mr. Mayor and members of the Assembly, that's my short presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions, or if there are some questions later that I can get back with you for some more information, I'd be happy to do that as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We do appreciate the people from the Barrel that have been employed with you, too. I know a few. Anybody have any questions? Assemblymember Keel.
Mr. Parkin, in your presentation, you mentioned royalties paid to Chulista Corporation. What is the amount of that royalty? And second, do you pay royalties to anyone other than the regional corporation?
The amount of the royalty is an agreement between Chulista and the company. So I don't have that information to share with you. As you understand, the 7I provision, the corporation, the Chulista Corporation, will get a certain percentage of it, and then a certain percentage goes to all of the other regional corporations in the state, and that's divided out and then distributed to the villages. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but.
Assemblymember Halter.
I just wanted to thank you. I got to push my button for Donlin spots in a Iditarod Trail sled dog race. I know it's a big deal to all us mushers, and it's a worldwide event, and we really appreciate your sponsorship, so thank you.
Well, thank you. We're really happy to do it. Gold mining and mushing has been part of the state for a long, long time. We're glad to bring it back into the fold.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Assemblymember Woods.
If we did accidentally get that 2-foot gas line coming down there, and you were able to hook onto that profitably, what percentage of that 2-foot flow would you be requiring? Did you make any estimates for something like that?
For essentially tapping into the pipeline?
Right. Yes.
Well, the capacity of the pipeline is far exceeds what we're going to need. Mm-hmm. And so there will be opportunities if somebody wanted to put together a plan and the economics were there to hook in, to tap into that pipeline. It'll be essentially open to anybody's use if they can figure out a way to tap into it. We're not going to run a utility. We're not going to be doing that sort of thing, but the opportunity is there.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, thank you.
Thanks,
I guess
again.
You and MEA will be in a race to see who gets generating first.
Yeah, all right. Thanks. Thanks again.
Not that dissimilar in size either. Mr. Manager?
Yes, just want to inform the Assembly that Goose Creek this week received its first customers. They'll be filling that thing up probably sooner than later. So that project's underway and state-funded, and we're happy to have it, provided many local jobs for the facility. Also, too, later this evening, we have two issues regarding the ferry. One is on the listing with a broker, and also, too, for the federal surplus list. I was not able to attend, but it's my understanding that the Port Commission passed a resolution is recommending that we bring the ferry up to our port. And I don't know the whole details of that, but I believe that came yesterday. And also, too, Mr. Arvin has requested that we get a cost analysis of pulling the ferry out of the water and landing on the port. And so we can discuss that a little later. From my understanding, it's a $20,000 to $60,000 information gathering. And I would like your input on that opportunity for us. So that's all I have at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Attorney?
I don't have anything to report.
Okay. Madam Clerk.
The clerk's report is in your red folders, and I do apologize, Assemblymember Arvin. I did not email that out to you today. It does have the meetings from July, of course, July through September. One of the items is possibly, on this agenda, we have two items that are going that are being introduced for public hearing on August 7th for the ballot. If the Assembly thinks that it's going to take more than one meeting to get through these two items, I would strongly suggest you schedule a meeting for August 9th, because all ballot propositions have to be approved by August 10th. So basically, if you only leave August 7th, you've only got that one meeting to make your decision. So I was wondering if the Assembly wanted to go ahead and schedule a meeting for August 9th. It can always be canceled.
We have a meeting before then, don't we?
The public hearing for these items is being introduced tonight for public hearing on August 7th. So if they want it to be postponed, it could go to August 9th, and then August 10th is the last day to adopt anything. So
August 7th is too late to advertise for a meeting on the 9th.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, it might be smart to somebody to make a motion to have a meeting for the 9th. Then.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to make a motion to schedule a meeting for August 9th.
Regular meeting, 6 o'clock?
Yes.
Is there objection to that? Hearing none, we have one more meeting to go to. But we can cancel it on the 7th if we need to.
And that was all I had, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Very good. Citizen and other correspondence. There's no unfinished business, no vetoes. The special orders of the day is our public hearings, and so. Oh, that's right. Yes, I forgot to make a note to myself. So, we will open the audience participation, and since we moved it up on the agenda, I would remind you to not speak to any of the public hearing items. You'll have an opportunity to speak specifically to those when we come to them. But at this time, you can speak to anything else on the agenda or anything else on your mind that's appropriate. We first have Ms. Helen Minos, followed by Bill Kramer.
Whoops, Helen Minos. And I'm addressing manager, mayor, and the assembly. You have a resolution coming before you tonight, 12083, regarding a study of the regional sewer and water. I've been appearing before this assembly for 40 years. I've been working on this project without, we were in the business for a long time, but now it's just something that I think when we talk about infrastructure, it's something that's been ignored for a long time, and it's something that should be addressed. In fact, a couple of the assembly people were probably in diapers when I started this. And I don't give up. And it's something that's so basic, I shouldn't have to stand before anybody and even talk about it. And I'll thank Mr. DeVilvis for bringing it up again tonight. I'm on a board working on it with two other pumpers this time. It's my second time around. The problem has not gone away. I've seen a lot of things. I've seen a ferry. And really, the state-of-the-art sewer system at Goose Creek, maybe I should go out and work on that. Because here we are in this borough with economic development being one of the prime things that everybody talks about, and we can't even take care of our own septage. And you're not going to run sewer lines all over the Matsu borough. It hasn't been done back where I came from, and that's 30 miles from New York City. So, I'm not going anywhere, and maybe the good Lord will let me see part of it, at least in the planning stage, and looking a little bit forward on that issue. Thanks.
Thank you for your service, Helen. Bill Kramer.
My name is Bill Kramer. I'm president of the Big Lake Community Council. I'm here to speak in favor of a consent agenda item that affects our area. There is a community impact assessment funding for a contract being awarded to HDR. Certainly we know in Big Lake, a lot of the activities that are taking place are a lot of the are coming through Big Lake. So this is a impact assessment that we have been in support of. We've been in participation and appreciate the opportunity with the Matsu Borough to comment and get some of our comments in. So we feel that the RFP that was issued is well written. HDR, the company who is going to be awarded potentially the contract with this, understands our needs, and I am here representing Big Lake in support of that contract as written. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you don't hear from HDR in the process, let us know. Anybody else? Please come forward, state your name for the record.
I'm Dave Cruz. I'm on the Port Commission. Just wanted to make some comments on the ferry that we have, the issue. It's a pretty hot issue for our committee, and I know yours. Manager Moosey rained on my parade here with that announcement, but I will reaffirm that was a unanimous vote from all our committee members to bring that ferry up here to Port McKenzie to store it here and just kind of have a cooling off period. There's a lot of misinformation floating around. From my history, to tell you guys, I've sat 7 years on that Port Commission, and I've watched the numbers go for the two ferry landings that we need to make this thing fly from 14 point some million to now 30 million. And I've watched, I do not believe in those numbers at all. I would really like to be on a small committee to try and come up with a way, you know, to address that. I don't know if the port committee is the right term or what, but they are extremely overinflated. Siri, Cook Inlet Region, has Siri Tourism built a 120-foot floating dock in Whittier with the same type of requirements that we need, short of driving cars down on it, for $1 million, and it served well. So I really think that, you know, if we look back on the history, we approved $4.6 million to build a ferry terminal, told these residents of Matsu, we're got to have a ferry terminal because we have a ferry. We have a $70 million ferry sitting in Ward Cove. I've looked the vessel over. It's a beautiful vessel, and we're lacking a little bit of infrastructure, and I really think that it would be good to bring this vessel up here. There's a lot of different ways you can handle it when it's here, but take into consideration, let's really look at some factual cost and not inflated cost, because I don't see $30 million for two landings, maybe if they're platinum-plated, but when I see what other people have done. So I just ask you to take some consideration. Let's not let this thing die. Senator Stevens and a lot of people worked on it. I am very concerned that we will never see a bridge here due to how our environmental lobbies work and how they sue over everything. Well, a bridge crossing that is a great target to sue when you got an endangered species swimming around out there. So that's my comments. Thank you for your time, and I'm always open to discussing this issue.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Hi, my name is Terry Snyder. I'd like to talk about Resolution 12-084. Changing the date of the borough elections is simply a solution looking for a problem. Moving the election date would be a huge mistake. Right now, the election, a full month before the state national election, borough issues and candidates get discussed prior to election, and there is enough media focus and public attention to actually vet in a significant detail. Voters will get a taste of information overload this November as national elections take place along with our state, with 59 legislators and ballot measures trying to get their message out. For candidates, printing and media costs will be at their peak during state and national elections, which should disenfranchise some from running. It may punish local businesses as candidates look outside and on the internet for cheaper prices. to get their messages across. An October election gives the borough one full month of extra time to launch the voters' intent on big issues, such as school and road bonds, and it gives the Assembly additional time to iron out any particulars in proceeding with the work. It's an extremely short construction season, and it's vitally important for the economy of the borough. We shouldn't be telling people that local issues matter and then let them get swallowed up in state and national issues and politics. Having the election in October separates the issues and the candidates in voters' minds. If the problem is voter turnout, then perhaps it should be addressed by a marketing program done by the borough to educate the importance of participating in local elections at a much smaller taxpayer cost. The borough could enlist robocalls to remind the residents to vote. If a date change is considered, why not April, the same time as Anchorage in a municipal election? Syncing local election with neighboring areas makes more sense than folding into the state and national election and politics. Perhaps some funds could be used to investigate a vote-by-mail ballot that's wildly successful in other states and can result to cost savings in the borough. As a self-described conservative assembly, you should consider that this move will cost the borough in excess of an estimated $135,000 just to get it off the ground. The cost of attracting more trained election workers and an additional training down the road is not included in the cost, and it could cost substantially more. And it will result in costs to charter changes for the cities, which are already strained with city budgets. There's no citizen outcry for the borough election date to be changed. No initiative's been brought forward. And with many big projects, a major renovation of borough offices underway and continued personnel changes, it's not a task to heap on the pile. Lastly, this assembly voted down this some months ago for good reasons. Those reasons haven't changed, and the half-baked idea shouldn't be put on the ballot. Passing a change of this magnitude for Valley voters should include
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing and hearing none, we will close audience participation and move into our public hearings. There was no objection to combining the first four ordinances, so Madam Clerk, would you read those before we open the public hearing?
I sure will, Mr. Mayor. Ordinance Serial Number 12-085, an ordinance accepting and appropriating a $15,452.60 Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and requesting a reappropriation of $1,716.95 from the Sutton Fire Service Area Fiscal Year 2013 Operating Budget, Fund 253, to Project Number 20255, Fund 405, for the fire training and equipment and prevention activities related to wildland fire, with accompanying resolution Serial Number 12-077, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for the Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and matching funds for Sutton Fire Service Area Project Number 20255, Fund 405. Ordinance Serial Number 12-086, an ordinance accepting and appropriating a $20,000 Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and requesting a reappropriation of $2,222 from the Butte Fire Service Area Fiscal Year 2013 Operating Budget, Fund 251, to Project Number 20144, Fund 405, for fire training and equipment and prevention activities related to wildland fire, with accompanying resolution Serial Number 12-078, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and matching funds for Butte Fire Service Area Project Number 20144, Fund 405. Ordinance Serial Number 12-087, an ordinance accepting and appropriating and approving the scope of work and budget for a $8,511.92 Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and requesting a reappropriation of $945.76 from the Caswell Lakes Fire Service Area Fiscal Year 2013 Operating Budget, Fund 248, to Project Number 20150, Fund 405, for fire training and equipment and prevention activities related to wildland fire, with accompanying resolution Serial Number 12-079, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for the Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and matching funds for Caswell Lakes Fire Service Area Project Number 20150, Fund 405, Ordinance 0-12-088, an ordinance accepting and appropriating and approving the scope of work and budget for a $11,873.51 Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and requesting a reappropriation of $1,319.27 from the Willow Fire Service Area Fiscal Year 2013 operating budget, Fund 258 to Project Number 20146, Fund 405, for fire training and equipment and prevention activities related to wildland fire with accompanying resolution 0-12-080, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for the Alaska State Division of Forestry Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and matching funds for Willow Fire Service Area Project Number 20146, Fund 405.
Thank you.
Thank you for reading that into the record. So we will open public hearing, and we have Carrie Whitaker signed up to speak to that.
Okay. This is my first time here, so forgive my ignorance. Again, my name is Carrie Whitaker, and I am a single mom. And the reason why I'm here today is because I called the Matsu Gym to, or the Palmer Gym, to sign up to use it for my daughter's birthday party. She's turning 16, and I found out that the cost of the gym is $40 per hour. I was really concerned when I heard the amount of it, and in talking with a few people, I found out that the cost of it was $25, and it rose to $40 per hour. Not too long ago, I'm not sure exactly how often this changes, but, you know, as our kids get from one point to another growing up, my kids have grown up in the valley, and trying to find cost-effective things for them to do is really a hard thing to do when you can't afford snow machines and afford toys and such. You look for community things that our kids can participate in. So I think I only have 3 minutes, so I should probably talk quick. So to break this down for you, there was a large group of 10 basketball players that played at the gym, from what I understand. It went from $2.50 an hour for them now to $4 per hour. For my daughter's dance, for 5 hours, it's going to be $125, or it'll be $200. So that's a big difference. That's a lot of money when you're when people are working at Walmart and Subway, they're homeschooling. People that are going to Christian schools, you know, homeschools, that sort of thing. So I just want to say that us common folk can't afford those fees. So I would really appreciate it if, you know, if you look at it, the usage went down, from what I understand, 50% as well, that gym. So if you really want the community to use it, please, please lower the fees back to $25 an hour. I mean, even lower would be great, but 25 would be awesome if that's possible. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Next time,
yes, sir.
When you want to speak on something that's not on the agenda, that's what audience participation is for.
Oh, I thought that's where I was at.
No.
Okay, I apologize.
We moved it on the agenda, so it's not entirely your fault.
Okay.
We're supposed to be talking about these grants that we just introduced.
Oh, do you want me to wait and come back up
time?
Or would you like me to just...
The reason I let you continue, because I figured it would save time rather than stopping you.
Okay.
But we will give you grace this time around.
Well, thank you. Thank you. My kids, you know, they're all swimming at Kepler Lake right now, having a blast. It's free to let my kids go swimming there. And so if you guys can just take those things into consideration, these public community places that... they're really dear to us locals, and we would really appreciate the costs being kept down as much as possible.
Yeah, I think you need to be speaking to the school board about that, too.
Well, you know, I'm actually a new teacher. I just graduated last year, so I'm a new teacher. I'm doing my part in this community.
Well, if you come tomorrow night, there's probably a school board meeting, and you can say it again.
Okay, well, tomorrow, I have plans tomorrow, but...
I'm not sure about that, though.
You know, I will definitely keep I'll learn more about this process. This is new for me. This is the first time I've ever done this. So
okay.
I just heard about it, and I thought I'd come speak my piece.
Well, welcome to the Valley. You got me.
I've lived here for a lot of years, but I'm new to this sort of realm.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Now, is there anybody that wants to speak to the public hearings that are on the table? It has to do with the ordinance, right? We just
tax ordinance.
No, this is not the tax thing. So I will close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Salmon, since they're all together.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move that the Assembly approve ordinance serial number 12-085. With accompanying resolution serial number 12-077, ordinance serial number 12-086, and accompanying resolution serial number 12-078, ordinance serial number 12-087, and accompanying resolution serial number 12-079, ordinance serial number 12-088, and accompanying resolution serial number 12-080.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, those pass. And now, ordinance 12-089, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance providing for the sale of certain borough-wide real property acquired through tax foreclosure for the delinquent real property taxes years 1993 and prior, 1994, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, and 2012, and not needed for public purpose.
Thank you. Now, we do have a sign-up sheet, and Mr. David Bartels is first, followed by Neil Snyder.
Greetings and God bless you all. My name is David Bartels, and I noticed when you guys did the pledge, it was about liberty and justice for all. And I noticed you made the word objection, so I'm going to get the formality out of the way. I'm objecting to the foreclosure and respectfully demanding the title be put back in my name. I understood that by the documents that I'm the owner of the property. And by the way, I don't know if you guys saw the Frontiersman paper Sunday. But there is, talking about public or private, and then they had the editorial talking about the ownership, and the state was basically stonewalling this guy, getting down to the bottom of who owned the land. That's the problem I had here, and the end comment was, so here we are left with a pretty disturbing and thus far unanswered question. Does anybody really have clear title to their land? And so under due process, I haven't gotten notice from any that it wasn't my land. Okay. I didn't get due process on what a taxpayer is. I've been trying to get the statutory definition from you of what a taxpayer is and who decided that I was a taxpayer, how I got on your tax rolls. So I've been giving you notice that I gave you an 8-page document there in front of you. And there's some good information on the difference between we, the people of the United States, and a citizen of the United States. You did your pledge that one nation. I hope you realize you're basically pledging to the federality as a citizen of the United States as a 100% federal, non-sovereign, and a stateless person. And that's what everybody's swearing to on the government forms and applications for voters' registration, Social Security, passport, licensing. It's that one nation under God, under fraud. It's totally under the federal thing. And you'll see then under the licensing, driver's license, they have us acting as a business entity. That's what I contend the taxpayer is. And the under multi-state tax compact, the that's actually a governmental person, is the way I see it. And I was just trying to get the law obeyed and get my answers, my questions answered. And I told you why I'm on this. I'm not so much against taxation. I'm against taxation by fraud, excessive taxation, misapplication of the law, et cetera, and I told you kind of why I got into it. The court system transferred a $550,000 home without my consent and signature, and pretending they got authority, did nothing wrong, without my consent, without a warrant. So there's a bunch of stuff on the Fourth Amendment warrant. I already gave you on the Fifth Amendment saying there, Supreme Court saying you can't drive your life, liberty, property unless you've been convicted of a public offense. Fourth Amendment is right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers in effect, and no warrant shall issue. Warrants are for crime. And then I can't get anybody to answer my questions. And I was here objecting last year, so I was hoping I could get a public hearing on this to get to the bottom of it. I appreciate it. I think it would be nice if man's homeless.
Good timing. Thank you.
Yep.
Next is Neil Snyder, followed by Angel C. Okay. Angel C, followed by Cherry. Cherry, I think it's LeBec.
Cheryl.
Yeah, you'll be next.
Okay. Hi. My name's Angel C. It's the first time I've ever been here, ever done this. So I'm here mainly because I'm on the foreclosure list. I'm not sure who I talked to, but I talked to somebody at the borough office, and they told me I owe like $10,000 by October, or they'll sell my property. I've been on the property for 18 years now. I don't know, by tax assessment, it says the house is worth approximately $59,000. It's worth a lot more to me, but I don't know what to ask for. I don't know if there's any way I can get an extension, you know, or some kind of payments. I know I'm behind on my taxes. I just hate to lose my house over, you know, $10,000. My husband's been out of work for just a couple months now, but he did this morning get a job. Starts Thursday mornings, and I don't know what those kind of paychecks are like, so I can't say, you know, how much I can come up with before October. But we were looking at, you know, cashing in or taking a big loan out of his 401 so that we could pay it. But if there's any way I might be able to get around, you know, touching his 401, that would really be awesome. But I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how to save my property.
Is it in your name?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's in Angel Burke, which is my maiden name.
Angel Burke.
Yeah, that's my maiden name. I just haven't changed the paperwork with my married name.
Oh, you should be able to identify it then.
Thank you.
Cheryl, followed by Nancy Salt.
Good evening. First of all, I want to thank each and every one of you from last year for taking our property. I'm real sentimental when it comes to my home where I live. I've lived for over 30 years.
Could you state your name for the record?
Cheryl Levine.
Levine.
My husband and I, of course, we've had bad luck and whatnot. I know my taxes have gone, they've spiraled. I have made some payments. I'm expectant. I might have it all, but I'm planning to give a good portion of it. But I was told when I went down to the borough to make a payment, at first they didn't want to take my money. I had to get Nancy Herford to come and say it's okay. Well, she did inform me that if I was $100 short, that my house would still be sold. Another concern that I have, the taxes were, before I made payments, was $14,007. The interest and penalties were $13,004. That's almost as much as the taxes. if, you know, I know I got to pay all that. I know that. But my concern is something needs to be done about the interest and penalties. It's crazy. It seems like every time I turn around, there's a $40 here and a $40 here, $700 here. I can never catch up with that. So hopefully before, what is it, October 26th, I will have all of it covered, and hopefully I'll have that $100 or, you know, not be shy $100. But anyway, I want to thank you all from last year. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Nancy, followed by Lorinda Moss.
Oh, no chair. I like a chair. My name is Nancy Salt, and I've come here for the last few years, and I have found good helpers on this assembly. I have also found good helpers in the clerk's office. I did a public information request, and I got it emailed to me. And someone who lives 40 miles away from this borough office, that's very much appreciated, so I'd like to say thank you to the clerk's office. They're doing an awesome job. I'd like to offer a solution for some of these, and I've been working with different homeless groups, and I think if we could treat the nonprofit 501c3 organizations that help with the homeless, like Family Promise, My Home, or My House, they're called, they're helping our homeless teens in the valley, the Matsu Coalition on Homeless, could we offer them a chance to buy these properties that are abandoned or just land and use for a good public purpose of housing the homeless? Family Promise today is housing 14 individuals in our churches because those churches volunteer their buildings and their time and their food to feed the homeless families. When I started my list this year, I go through the list each year to try to find out if there are going to be homeless families. And when I at first look at it, it was horrid. And I'm sure John's getting tired of my emails. I started out with 22 properties that I wanted removed from the list. And then word got around, you're not going to get the votes. So I'm sure you didn't have any closed meetings or anything, but just the general consensus was maybe that was a bit too much to ask for. So what I did is I took a ride. I loaded up my grandkids this weekend, and I said, we're going to go take a look and see, because you can usually tell if someone's living in a home or not. And I've narrowed my search and my request down to four properties. Four properties have multiple generation families living in them who will be able to pay the taxes, who don't protest the amount. They don't protest their values. They just had bad luck. My bad luck was my husband got cancer, and he passed away. And it took our family years to recover. And we almost lost it all. We did have to sell some property. But in the meantime, this assembly and the prior manager were willing to work with me and keep me off the sale list so that we didn't lose our home along with our main provider. So I'm hoping that you'll at least talk to these people and find out if you could make an agreement. The properties are 18, 10, 11, and 21. They all have families living in them, and especially Blaine Ullman. You all know him, the guy that sells barrels. He sells barrels around the valley, and he will really have nowhere to go but his pickup truck. So I'm requesting tonight that you remove 18, 10, 11, and 21. And let's sit down and talk about another way.
Thank you for your homework. I have been following that on the emails. Does anybody else want to speak? Please come forward. Oh, that's right. I forgot my list. Lorinda Moss.
My name is Lorinda Moss. I've never appeared before the Borough Assembly before, and I do appreciate this opportunity. I am just newly aware of the situation with the foreclosures. due to non-payment of taxes. I am fully aware that there are people who flagrantly do not pay their property taxes, and they need that extra push or that maybe that threat to do so. But given the economic situation in the United States and certainly in Alaska now, I would ask that you would look very closely at these people and these people you might make homeless, and be sure that you're not making someone homeless that you should really and truly try to work with. It's also been, I have been told, and I do not know if this is true, but I have been told that there have been homes foreclosed due to non-payment of property taxes when those homes are in probate. As long as a home is in probate and the courts are still hearing the case, I do not believe that it is right to foreclose that home, because those who are depending upon that inheritance to perhaps pay bills or outstanding hospital bills or whatever, or just receive that inheritance, they have a right to that. And you should not take it away before it's gone through the court system. If that is not true, then I apologize. But I would like to know if that is true. In any case, please, for the sake of these people, do not make any more people homeless that deserve a chance to make it right. And please, please look at the penalties and interest that you are charging on these and make it a little more reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Solomon.
I move to adopt ordinance serial number 12-089.
Okay. We have come to our customary time for our first break. Do we want to do that before we debate this? Is there any objection? Let's take a 10-minute recess, and we'll come back at 20 after. Okay, I'm going to call the meeting back to order. We have a quorum back at the table. Assemblymember Arvin, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Wow, you're closer than we are, it sounds like. So this is on the table.
Mr. Mayor.
Assemblymember Halter.
I'm going to move to remove three properties from the sale, TS-28-18, TS-28-10, and TS-28-11.
Okay, there's a motion. You want to discuss it?
Well, those are three of the four that Ms. Salt asked for some leeway on and give the people a chance to pay their taxes up and to remain living in their house for another year. One or two of them have had that opportunity. We'll just give them another opportunity and hope that economic times turn better and they'll be able to pay their taxes. And I don't think it'll hurt the borough in any way financially. And so I'd ask for consideration of those three properties.
Mr. Mayor?
Assemblymember Solomon?
Yes, sir. Speaking to that motion, I'm in favor of that. I just wondered, I have another list. Would that be a separate motion to remove these, and the purpose is different if they have been paid? So should we move on this?
Let's
move on to these others?
Let's keep it simple, and we'll act on these and then the other.
Thank you, sir.
Does anybody else want to speak to the amendment removing three parcels? Assemblymember Keel.
Mr. Mayor, through the manager, regarding these three parcels, TS-2810, 2811, and 2818, are any of these properties ones that were before us last year? My recollection is that we gave a one-year exception to one or more of these. Is that, am I mistaken, or is that correct?
I'm going to have staff come up and address that. I believe Nancy Herford. Last year, from my understanding, the assembly removed six, and only one of the six made any attempt to pay anything towards her tax liability. Of course, that accrued an additional year.
I want to make the record real clear that the reason I picked these three are that people are living in these homes at this particular time. That distinguishes them a little bit from some of the other properties that are for sale.
I think you did make that clear. Okay. Ms. Herford, do you want to address the issue of these three? Were any of them on last year's list?
Yes, parcels number 18 and number 10.
Okay. Mr. Manager, does that answer your question, Assemblymember Keogh?
If I may, with a follow-up question through the mayor to staff, the 2810 and 2811, how long of a period of time have these taxes on these properties not been paid? How delinquent are they?
I know that. Parcel number 18 owes taxes back through 1996 and has just recently, last week, made two payments, one in the amount of $2,600 and the other in the amount of $500. As to the other parcel, I don't have the exact dates, but I do believe that they owe prior to 2006. And to the best of my knowledge, no payments have been received on that parcel either.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Welcome. Mr. Mayor.
Assemblymember Arvin.
Yeah, so Ms. Salt did what would appear to be a pretty exhaustive effort to find out really what these foreclosures mean to each individual property. I'd like to know what staff has done. Do we know internally how many properties are occupied? Do we know internally how many individuals have asked the borough for some sort of payment plan or some latitude? What do we know internally?
We'll ask Ms. Herford again, and then the manager will follow up.
I will ask assistance from the borough attorney on payment plans. My understanding is statute is very explicit. We cannot enter into payment plans. Statute says that the total amount due and owing must be paid by these people who own these properties prior to the borough to repurchase them.
Can you address? We certainly do know which of these properties have improvements on them.
Correct. Of the parcels that haven't been offered before, we have 12 of them that have some sort of improvement on that, and that is in your packet. And of the parcels offered last year that the assembly removed from the sale, there are six. And we do make every effort to try and find these people to let them know.
Mr. Manager.
Yes, Mr. Assemblyman Arvin. There is one family who spoke this evening who came in and met with me after you took them off the list last year, and we spent some time, and Don Moore also did some research on this, looking at their tax bill, and we searched high and low trying to find a way to do a payment plan or to blunt the interest rate that's accruing on those, and we did exhaustive research and found out, just like Ms. Herford said, that because it's state statute, we cannot. And we certainly looked at many options for this family to try to help them through and get them back on track. And we're very limited. It's essentially a black and white issue, and you either pay or if you don't, you know, we're coming to the assembly to say this is what we have to do to follow the law. But we did have one family who I probably spent two or three meetings with, and I know when we had Don Moore here, he spent quite a bit of time, and Don did extensive report trying to find an opportunity for this, and it has just not been available in the law for us. this is the same family that came, I think, last week, and Nancy referred to, did make a couple payments.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Attorney, could you affirm what that, it sounds like all we can do is delay things at this table, and it, could you also address the issue of, that was raised in public testimony about probate?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, every year when you pass the budget ordinance, you set the dates of payment, generally August 15th, February 15th. You set a rate of penalty, and you set a rate of interest. You do that by resolution, and that accompanies the ordinance that is the budget. So when you look at these foreclosures, what you're talking about is people in the past, with the past assemblies or even for some of the more recent members, even just a few years ago, the assembly setting the rates of interest and penalty. If the assembly doesn't want rates of interest and penalty to be added, you would do that during the budget cycle. So if you don't want a rate of penalty and you don't want interest, then next year in the budget cycle you can set that rate as zero, and that essentially means if people don't pay their taxes, they owe us taxes, but there is no penalty. Of course, that raises a fiscal problem of cash flow. How does the borough operate if people don't pay their taxes on time? That's one of the reasons for the penalty. The interest, under the state statutes and the court rulings, the interest is the time value of money. The borough needs to make do with less. And I think just as a practical effect, the net result of both of them is induces people to pay their taxes timely. State statute does mandate that it is a debt that's owing. To forgive it for some people and not forgive it to other people, in my opinion, would violate the equal protection rights of those people who paid. There's lots of legal ins and outs to the whole analysis, and I'd be more than happy to discuss it in depth if anybody wants to, that is, any of the assembly members or the mayor. With regards to the probate issue, the thing that the assembly needs to know is that the Superior Court of the State of Alaska is a court of general jurisdiction. In certain states, you've got probate court, you've got tax court, you've got family court, you've got criminal court, you've got all these different courts. In Alaska, we have one superior court. They have jurisdiction over everything, which means the same superior court would have jurisdiction over our foreclosure and a probate action. Obviously, you can see here some estates listed as the owners. I am 1,000% confident that the borough has made all practical, reasonable measures to get in touch with either the estate, the executor of the estate, the decedents of the estate, to inform them. If a stay can be put on by the Superior Court, most times executors have the power to use other assets of the estate or protect the current assets of the estate with their own if they need be, to protect the estate. So to say that, well, it's because it's in probate and nobody's dealing with it, once a probate is opened, the Superior Court appoints somebody to deal with devising the assets of the estate. And those are the people that would have the power to do it. And if they can't, they can certainly go to court and say, look, I need you to order the borough to stop. And the court has equitable jurisdiction to tell us, okay, you're going to slow down. You're not going to do this right now until they can get the money to make the payment. What the court cannot do is forgive the payment, abate the payment, or say, no, here's a payment plan, because they lack the power to do that.
Mr. Mayor?
Assembly Member Solomons first, and then Assembly Member Halter.
Just to be clear, we do have a motion on the floor to remove 10, 8, 11, and 18, and the previous information was very interesting, but not relative to that motion, I don't believe. So I'd like to call for the question, sir.
Is there objection to closing debate on the amendment?
If I could comment on what the attorney said after the vote, I'd appreciate that.
I'd be glad to, but that can happen after the vote.
Okay, thank you.
Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing none, it passes. Assemblymember Halter.
Why would there not be an equal protection argument if you give a $20,000 exemption to a certain class of taxpayers and you wouldn't give it to another part of the taxpayers if you didn't qualify for that exemption?
Are you talking about the residential real property
tax
exemption?
I don't know what I'm talking about, Mr. Attorney. I'm wondering about the question. If you give one group an exemption and not another group is not entitled to it, why wouldn't there be a similar equal protection argument?
The $20,000 real property tax exemption was challenged in the in Kenai when they passed it, and the Supreme Court found that encouraging home ownership and encouraging the owner to reside in the home that they own is a well-grounded and traditional governmental role to encourage strong communities, civic pride, lower crime rates, because people tend to take care of their properties better. And they struck down the challenge.
So they blew off the equal protection argument. You were just so proud of.
They did.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
Assemblymember Salmon, on the main motion.
Well, I have another amendment, sir.
Yes.
It's relative to the fact that these properties, as having been reported to me, should be removed from the list as those tax bills have been made current. And that would be 28-0, 28-35, 28-38, and 28-54. I move that those be removed from the list.
Okay. Is there objection to that? Sounds like shouldn't be much argument about that. I don't hear any objection, so that amendment carries and those parcels are removed. Is the finance director speaking to this amendment or?
Finance director has clarified for me. The first one I read is 28-0. Should have been 28-01. The rest stand as read.
Is that clear, Madam Clerk?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes,
no objections. Very good. Okay, we have amended motion on the floor. Are we ready? Is there objection? Hearing none, it passes. Madam Clerk, Ordinance 12-090.
An ordinance accepting and appropriating $20,000 from the Fishhook Community Council to fund 430, Project Number 35187, Hatcher Pass Access Road and Transit Facility, reappropriating $28,000 from Fund 440, Project Number 15040, $100,000 from Fund 480, Project Number 20332, and $20,000 from Fund 4755, Project Number 20343, to Fund 430, Project Number 35187, Hatcher Pass Access Road, Transit and Community Facility, with accompanying resolution serial number 12-082, a resolution amending the budgets for Project Number 15040, Parks and Recreation Projects, Projects Number 20332, Traffic Calming, Project Number 20343, Mascot, and Project Number 35187, Hatcher Pass Access Road and Transit Facility, to supplement the funding to allow the construction of the transit facility bus accommodations.
Mr. Mayor, point of order.
Okay. We will open this for what?
Ron, I think, asked. I think Assemblymember Arvin was asking.
Oh, Assemblymember Arvin, did you want to speak before public hearing?
Yeah, actually, I have a point of order. On the last motion, 12-089, there was one amendment by Mr. Keo that had no objection. And then Mr. Salmon made a motion that had no objection, but I'm not sure we dispensed with the main motion.
The clerk assures me that we did. There was no objection.
Okay. Well, I guess I have a question on that.
Did you want to reconsider?
Well, I want to make sure that we're not rendering anybody homeless. I'm not sure that we effectively went through that or not.
Well, you've got till tomorrow night to reconsider it, I guess. Tomorrow at 5.
Very good.
So we have a public hearing on the Hatcher Pass, and we will open it at this time. We have Dave Musgrove, followed by Ralph Benzie.
Hello, I'm Dave Musgrave. I'm been the organizer for the Matsu Junior Nordics For the past 3 years, Matsu Junior Nordics is a ski program for kids, nominally 6 to 14, roughly the primary school and middle school age. And we also have kids down to 4 years old. And I appreciate this opportunity to speak for you tonight in support of this ordinance. I'm also speaking on behalf of Matsu Junior Nordics also. Before I get to the ordinance itself, I'd really like to thank the mayor, the borough administration, and the assembly for getting going on the trails we have up there this year. I've been up there many times. The trails are really great. They're going in. There's bridges, there's culverts, and there's a massive freeway coming from Edgerton Park Road up to the parking lot. So it's all very exciting, and the Junior Nordics and parents and kids are looking very forward to skiing there this winter. Now, on this ordinance, one of the main things that I'm really a proponent of is a warm-up facility for the Junior Nordic kids. This will make it much more pleasant for them and much safer during times of high winds or cold weather. So I'd like to imagine this scenario. You're driving up there with your kids. You come to the parking lot. It's all dark. You got your kids in your car. You got to get them ready, get their skis on, get their poles, get their winter equipment, clothing on. And the only thing you have to do that is through headlights on your car. So it's very difficult. But you finally get them going. You get 30 kids out there, get them out on their skis. They go ski in the dark for now anyway. They got little headlamps on. And they all have a great time. And they get very excited and forget that it's cold outside. They get very sweaty. And they come back. And they're freezing as they get in their cars and try to head home. Now envision a different scenario where they come into a parking lot where there's lights. They can put on their ski. They can go into a building, change their clothes, put on their winter equipment, get ready to put on their ski boots, then go outside, step into their skis and go skiing, come back, change into dry clothes, and go home happy. So that's the scenario I'm looking at for my Junior Nordic kids and their parents. So I think it's, and the additionally, if we have flush toilets that you can imagine with 30 kids, that's going to make a big difference to them. So I urge you to support this ordinance, and let's get facility up there as well as power, which will give us lights there eventually. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ralph, followed by Bonnie Quill.
Mr. Mayor, Assembly members, my name is Ralph Renzi. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Palmer Chamber of Commerce, and thank you for your time tonight. By now, in your possession, you should have a letter of support for the development of the expanded transit center at Hatcher Pass, which was submitted earlier today by our board president, Jessica Thompson. In my position as Executive Director, I've been asked to come and also personally endorse this project. I do believe that development at this ski area aligns with the Chamber's mission, which promotes opportunity that fosters growth and prosperity by ensuring the Greater Palmer area is the best place to operate and grow a business, as well as the most desirable place to live, work, play, and visit. Basically, this is going to increase the functionality of that area for borough residents, as well as tourists. It's going to bring some jobs and a revenue stream and turn this into a full-time, year-round activity area. So we support it wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Thank you. Bonnie Quill.
Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, my name is Bonnie Quill, and I'm the Executive Director of the Matsu Convention and Visitors Bureau. I've distributed a letter to you from the Executive Committee of the Matsu CVB Board of Directors that was approved yesterday, and I'd just like to quickly read it to you. This letter is in support of Matsu Borough Resolution Number 12-082, appropriating funds to complete Hatcher Pass Transit and Community Facility using FY13 Tourism Infrastructure Bed Tax Funds. The 2008 Matsu Borough Tourism Infrastructure Needs Study reviewed tourism infrastructure projects and their economic impact. The study identified Hatcher Pass and South Denali as, quote, examples of potential large-scale destination and attractions development that warrant future borough involvement. continued borough investment and development is recommended to optimize visitor industry growth and related economic and employment impacts. Hatcher Pass has significant long-term potential for virtually all visitor markets, end quote. That's from the executive summary, pages 10 and 11. A community center makes much more sense than a small transit facility. Restrooms, a meeting space, a small cafe, and a rental operation would enhance the experience of the visitor. I've requested the manager review the operation budget of the Kincaid Park Chalet in Anchorage as a comparison. An enhanced facility will have positive effects on increased visitor volume, overnight stays, and contribution to the regional economy. The 2008 study also identifies visitor support services and trail system enhancements. The Assembly has taken very supportive action this past year to fund a large number of tourism infrastructure projects with resolution serial number 12-043 adopted on April 3rd. It includes purchasing restrooms, trail and parking improvements, docks, trail construction, trail surveys, and master plans. Also, the new Matsu Borough Trails Foundation was funded on March 15, 2011, with $100,000. The foundation role is to raise money and help the borough construct trails. The nonprofit is expected to raise $2 for every $1 borough. When these tourism infrastructure projects are complete, the Matsu Convention and Visitors Bureau will be marketing the enhancements and proudly boasting our world-class recreational area.
Just for clarity, in promoting a visitor center, you're not dissing the transit center, right?
No, we're asking for the enhancements.
You're asking for more. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Next is Ed Strable, followed by Aubrey Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Assemblyman. My name is Ed Strable. I'm a resident of the Fishhook Community Council area. I'm president of the Matsu Ski Club. I'm a retired ski coach. I couldn't hold a job. I've coached at Palmer, Colony, and Wasilla High School at one time or another. And I'd also like to speak in support of Ordinance 12-090. The construction of this community center, and I'd like to call it a community center as opposed to a warm-up building, because it's going to be used for just a whole bunch of different things. It'll be a major addition to the Fishhook community, as well as recreators from throughout the core area and even from Anchorage. I think that you assemblypersons received the email from Holly Brooks, Olympic skier. Those folks in Anchorage, they want to come on out here and ski on those trails. They're going to be kind of beginnerish, but hopefully over the years we'll develop some better trails. But the building will be a magnet for people, as was mentioned by the different folks from the community, the Chamber of Commerce and the Matsu Convention and Visitors Bureau, which I'll mention at the end here also. It'll be a real plus also for the high school ski teams, Dave Musgrave's Junior Nordic program, and also for just general folks that want to get out of the out of their car, go into a building where they can go ahead and dress out, go on out and ski, and then come back in and change into some dry clothing. It'll give wintertime recreators the place that place to meet. The U.S. Department of Transportation requirement to build the transit facility would be of little value and not really produce the most bang for the buck. I realize this money is being pulled together from a variety of different sources, but I think that in the long run, it's the way to go in order to go ahead and get the tax dollars used efficiently. It'll also serve as a source for administering other events, community meetings. Right now, the Fishhook community meets in the fire hall, which is cold at best and sometimes really cold. And also, it whenever the pump comes on, the well pump comes on, we've got to suspend our meeting until it goes off because you just can't hear. And it really is an inadequate any time we have a major event for the community. It should also be noted that back in 2008, the Matsu School District, the Mattsu Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Greater Palmer Chamber of Commerce, and the Greater Wasilla Chamber of Commerce all advocated for the development of this Nordic ski area. But the community center goes way beyond that, and this would really be a real plus. I know that the number of
thank you. Aubrey, followed by Mark Strabel.
Hello, my name is Aubrey Smith. Thank you very much, Mayor and Assemblyman. I'm new to the Wasilla area. I come from Seward originally, but I'm going to be a new teacher here and a ski coach for Wasilla High School. And I know coming from Seward, we have such a tiny community. And when I was growing up there, we finally got some ski trails built out at Mile 12, and it was a huge opportunity for people of the community that had never really skied before to get out there and experience something different, another winter activity, and it was huge for our community. And so I was really amazed to come to Wasilla, which is a much bigger community, and find no ski trails at the high school. And I think this new community center is going to be a huge plus for the Wasilla ski team and every other ski team in the area. Not only that, but just speaking from experiences in the communities I've been to and raced in, to have an actual center there, it just draws in so many more people. In a winter sport, you know, we live in a winter area, and in a winter sport we have inclement weather, and people that actually want to get outside but are a little hesitant to do so, they're much more likely to do that. And I think it's just going to be a huge draw to have this community center. So I definitely support this expanded transit and community center. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to the Valley. Mark, and then after that, there's nobody signed up, but we will open the floor.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Assembly people. My name is Mark Strabel. I'm a cross-country running coach, a cross-country ski coach, and a track coach at Colony High School, where I also teach. I'm also the race director for the Government Peak Hill Climb Race. Every year that Government Peak Hill Climb Race, roughly 200 to 300 people come out to the valley from either Anchorage, Fairbanks, or from out of state to come and spend money. One thing that they've always suggested is have a central place where they could relax and better prepare themselves for racing. And a community center, as the one proposed in the ordinance, is just that much better. And it makes that event so much better, because right now we are limited to where we can actually, how many people we can have. Not only that, with cross-country running, most high school cross-country running events have upwards of 500 to 600 runners, which most of those are from out of the borough, which are bringing in money. And each kid roughly spends anywhere from $50 to $75 every weekend that they come here. And the more opportunities that we have to have them come to the valley to spend their money just means more income for the valley. For skiing, anywhere from 300 to 400 racers, high school racers, coming in and spending just that much more money. With having a better opportunity, word spreads out, and then it's just an avalanche coming down the mountain where more and more people want to come. An example is up in Talkeetna. They've hosted a ski race called the Usyk Ski Race. And it started off with having 150 skiers. Now they are having close to 1,000 skiers come there for one race in the month of March, and they are spending money. They're renting out hotels and bed and breakfasts there. So the support of this ordinance for a community center at the base of Government Peak, it'd be an economic benefit to the valley. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else want to speak to this?
Hello, Mr. Mayor and the Assembly. I'm Helen Woodings. I've been a user of Hatcher Pass since 1953. My family's favorite memories are the ski to Snowbird Mine, especially the ski by moonlight to overnight there. I taught skiing through the Matsu College many years, and most of my classes went up to that area. Two of my grandchildren skied 4 years for Palmer High, and the third grandchild, I'm certain, will ski her junior year or the third year. I have one more grandchild coming up. These teams, the high school teams, travel to Kenai Peninsula, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Talkeetna, and Anchorage. Most of those weekends, my grandchildren had a $100 bill in their pocket, which they spent in those communities. We need to host those towns, those other teams, in Palmer. We have the best snow. Why don't we ever have a ski meet here? We don't have any place for them, no place to park. My family is a member of the Nordic Ski Club. I'm 82 years old. I have two artificial hips. I continue to ski gentle slopes. Hurry up and build this. I want to ski now while I'm alive.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor and members of the Assembly, I am also here to support Resolution 12090. My name is Cindy Bettini. I also want to ski here, and hopefully long before I'm 82. I testified for the very first funding for the dream of Hatcher Pass and skiing there. I think it was about 25 years ago. And it was the same era where we started the MSCVD and the first funding for that, and we've seen how successful that is. I think that Bonnie's idea and her board of directors of looking at the Kincaid Park Chalet is the direction that you really need to be going here. We're just poised to really do something great at Hatcher Pass in a meaningful tourism infrastructure way where we can look at tourism as a true economic driver at this end of the borough like we do today in Talkeetna. So with that, I think you know my position, and I know many, many other people that are just waiting for a facility up there, and not just skiers. I know people that want to bring meetings to our valley. And when you design the community center, we need to keep that in mind also, that we can host meetings in the summer, not just skiers. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing and hearing none, we will close testimony and bring it back to Assemblymember Colbert.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to adopt ordinance serial number 12-090 and resolution serial number 12-082. And if you'd allow me a little time, I'll give you a little history on why we're here tonight to look at this facility. We did approve the road construction funding using mainly federal transit funds. And the road project's well underway, as we've heard testimony tonight. And I do want to thank all of you for taking time out. We've had such a rainy summer. It shows huge support when you take time to come out at a night like this, and especially all the groups. It's really impressive. I really want to thank you. So when we had we weren't able to award the quote-unquote bus shelter, or they called it the transit center. This project, because it's Federal Transit Administration funding, requires a transit component. And the transit component is a bus stop up there with curb median and parking lighting around the building where the bus stop would be. Assistant manager Don Moore, he's a detail man. When this project was rolling, he instructed staff to research whether or not this project would be eligible for federal reimbursement without the transit center. The answer came back, you have to build the transit center. And the transit center by itself is about a $400,000 project for a very small 800-square-foot hut. But it included needing to extend the power. We've funded the conduit for the electricity in the road project, but there's no wire in there. So it's run the power up. It's do the site work with the curb and gutter for the transit requirements, the bus parking that are required, and build the bus shelter. Concurrently, the Fishhook Community Council had passed a resolution, and to get a resolution for the Fishhook Community Council is a monumental event. It requires a quorum of 35 that has only been met maybe once in 15 years. So the Fishhook Community Council, one of their actions was to set aside their $20,000 in revenue sharing towards the design of a community center. So at this point, when we had the answer from Federal Highways, this is about late May, early June, and we had a request sitting on our table for 50 acres from the community council for a community center up there in the borough lands in the Hatch Pass area, and also a initiative to say we'll put $20,000 towards a future design of their money. And there seemed to be some convergence of opportunity there. You know, most communities, Willow, Talkeetna, Chickaloon, now Sutton has a library. There's some kind of community facility, and that's what's sorely lacking in the Fishhook area. And they desire that, to have a meeting spot. So, there's a group of folks that meet, and a number of the staff members are here, on keeping track of this project. And so the idea was kind of developed that, hey, we could actually get the community use going up there. We could have a bigger, little bit bigger spot, something that the community can actually use, a bigger building, into this project. Because I think what we are, have a lot of trepidation about in our state and our community is, if we just build something because another layer of government tells us we have to, and it doesn't look like something that's of value or use, it does no credit to us for the project that we create. So we have a willing partner in the Fishhook Community Council. We have the huge community support for expansion of that facility, and that's what you have before you tonight. Dipping into different funds or reappropriating some other funds that have been laying around. And if you remember at budget time, you got about a notebook full of projects that were funded, but work wasn't actually moving forward on those. And then added to that list, we have $64 million in road bonds and $214 million in school projects. And there's only so much capacity to do projects. But we have a project rolling at Hatcher Pass in need of funding. So what we're talking about here with the leadership that we have in Public Works, Ms. O'Neill was got right on it. She did a little research. If we were going to build a building, something that's no frills, didn't require much interior finish, something that was handicap accessible, perhaps two-story, she came up with a design that's in your packet that is built into a hill because this is a hilly site. And so the upper floor would be handicap accessible with a ramp. There would be a garage on the back for storage of equipment, maintenance equipment. And the idea of the model would be put together a rough design like we did for the Academy Charter School, put it out on the street for the contractors to finish off the design, give us a number for completing the design and building the building. And I think that's the model that it seems to work well. We get a good price and a good product. So rather than we have to come up with the money for the transit shelter, whether or not we expand this to a community center for another roughly 400 and some thousand, the idea is let's build something we can be proud of, the community can use, a multifunctional building. I mean, I think we're already hearing of new opportunities, fall use, staging these mountain runs. You know, we could have our own Hatcher Pass marathon race based there, the cross-country running teams, anything that generates activity to fill our restaurants, hotels, gas stations. I don't think I need to elaborate on that. You're well aware of the economic impacts thing. So it's just not for just skiers, and it's also for the community. There's for the people at Fishhook that don't ski. They want a place where they can meet, gather, and this would build community. So now let's talk about the funding. It proposed in here was to use some of the portion of the bed tax that was in the FY13 budget, the $350,000 that's in excess that goes to the Convention and Visitors Bureau. You've received some emails of concern from folks that were concerned that that would impact trail grooming grants. They're roughly $60,000 to $70,000. And staff responded to that, identified some other funding that would deal with taking care of that need for this year. Since then, there's still been concern about, you know, using that whole amount of that bed tax. And some of my colleagues are pretty adamant about that. And so kind of the proposal that I would bring forward to you is that we would come back and reimburse the bed tax fund here. We'd introduce next meeting a measure. We had $200,000 in this year's budget for a real estate development up at Hatcher Pass. Move this forward now and then come back, introduce, and then adopt at our next subsequent meetings to move that $200,000 back into the tourism infrastructure fund. So that would still leave a remaining balance in there of $200,000. And this project would still move forward as a expanded transit center into a community center.
Could you kind of wrap it up?
You got it. A lot of moving parts, Larry, and I wanted to kind of get those out on the table. But in closing, you know, you all received the emails from Olympian Keegan Randall, Holly Brooks, their coach Eric Flora, and also the members of the Alaska Pacific University ski team, and that was pretty cool. I emailed them back. I said, hey, thanks for your support. I'd like to have you involved in the dedication of our trails and facility, and so we got good replies on that. So we're going to be able to generate some activity and promotional efforts, I think, for this facility is going to help out the whole community. With that, I think I've hit on some of the high points, the friction points, and hopefully address those.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Assemblymember Halter.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Cover's comments because I think that fairly well was a good synopsis of the funding. And I guess it did bother me quite a bit to zero out the bed tax, $350,000 totally in 1 year, which would impair possibly grooming. I know Big Lakes would might be in jeopardy. Some of the Willow Trail grooming might be in jeopardy. And so this $200,000 would be moved back in by separate ordinance. And also, in talking to Mr. Keel, we had tried to refund using some of that money being moved back in the $15,000 to the Rabbit Slough access area and the $23,000 for the Cottonwood Creek access area, because those are important projects too. And see, we were kind of taking that money and moving it over to this other project. So those would be refunded, which I think is a valuable thing to do. The project itself, myself personally, I think a higher elevated, better, bigger center at this time is probably should be our goal, and not a scaled down, skimpy one. You can see the potential, and so the project itself has always been a high priority of mine. I actually tried to put that $200,000 that we're talking about now in the capital project for this building back at budget time, and I'm glad to see it's going back here by separate ordinance. Is that correct, Mr. Cover?
Yes, sir.
You're going to vote for that ordinance. Is that correct? Okay. I wanted to get that on the record, by the way.
I see a little bit of trust here. Assemblymember Solomon?
Yes, this particular ordinance, I had every 2 weeks we get calls about what's in this packet that we received. This is the only one that I had calls on, and it's from my Big Lake constituency. They're very fearful that the grooming money, which they have incredible trails up there utilized by a great many people outside of that area, but their fear was that money would be taken and absorbed into this. And having talked with Mr. Culver and his assurances that we now will have monies available such that that will not happen, I'd like, he also mentioned there may be other monies that such if that didn't happen that we would do that. And so I said, well, I'd like to have that out of matter of record if the administration could vouch for Mr. Culver.
Mr. Moosey, are you going to speak in good faith for Mr. Culver?
Do I have authority to vouch for assembly member?
It's pretty risky business.
He used your name, sir.
I understand the program, and we can make this project happen, also get money for the trails, also protect a portion of the funding for the bed tax money. I know that is a prize around here. And then also too for those two accesses, we can do all that. And I do appreciate we have a chance to do something much better than just the minimum here, and it will be an attraction. So I appreciate your consideration on this. And yes, I can stand by making that happen.
And I thank you for that confirmation. And just to reiterate, I do support the project for the very reasons that every speaker here tonight, including Ms. Bettini. Jim, we've worked on this for 25, if not 30 years, to get somewhere, and we're a heartbeat away. So I look forward to seeing this happen, and I thank you once again for your time.
Assemblymember Woods, followed by Assemblymember Keel. Is that right?
Thank you. I've received a lot of comments and emails and things from lots of people, both within the borough and outside the borough, that are extremely anxious to do this. The one thing I didn't see, and the reason I'm not going to vote for this, is that none of these people offered to form a group that would be responsible to manage the upkeep of this building, and I don't see the additional expense of borough employees taking that obligation away from our taxpayers. Thank you very much.
Assemblymember Keel.
I'd like to speak in support of this project as well. I do have to express some heartburn over the means of which it was funded, however. It's been pretty much covered by Assemblymembers Culver and Halter. In regards to the comments by Assemblymember Sam, and I've had similar concerns expressed by folks over questions of funding for trails in the Lake Louise area. So I'm satisfied that that's not a problem, as Mr. Moosey has informed us. And I'm glad to see that there's some recognition here. What we've attempted to do in this larger recreational project associated with Nordic skiing, in a small way, we're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul when we take the bookend parking lot expansions on both sides of the Palmer Hay Flats Refuge, both at Rabbit Slough and at the Cottonwood Creek, to take that $38,000 appropriation and stick it into this larger project. So I'm not happy to see that, but I'm satisfied with the comments by Mr. Culver and Mr. Halter and Mr. Moosey that we'll remedy that situation by reinserting more funds into that tourism infrastructure fund. So I think it's going to be a great project. I wish we could have gone about it in a better way funding-wise, but I, by the same token, I'm glad we've arrived at where we are. Thanks.
Assemblymember Colligan.
Reluctantly, I want to speak in favor of this. I think it would be a good thing. I am not happy about the way it's being funded and the like, but I am going to vote for it with the optimism that all these users will be so excited and exuberant about all the other users in the borough, the hunters, the motorized users, and everybody else that also contributes to our economy as we move forward. I think it's important that we're half pregnant on several projects, and I think this would be a good one to see come to fruition. And I also am excited to the fact that with all the budget stuff we went through, that the borough has found additional funds within the budget to cover some of this stuff, which I find very interesting and also excited about. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I will reiterate, and then I'll get to you, Assemblymember Arvin. Both at Willow and at Big Lake, it was pointed out that they are anticipating reduction in support from some of their other sources for trails, and they've kind of been anticipating and hoping to get more from the borough, so that's why they're very nervous about this. So let's not forget them. Assemblymember Arvin, I think you were trying to come out of the fog there.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, you know, we've got other initiatives in the borough that are economic development goals and objectives, and, you know, the fund that Tammy sets up, the name is escaping me right now, the Enterprise Fund. You know, there's expectation that ultimately this Hatcher Pass development will be a revenue generator for the borough. I'm wondering if the time has come for us to create an enterprise fund whereby we effectively loan the development money with the expectation at a later date the revenue generated will be used to pay the cost of the development back. Is the administration having talks about that?
Mr. Moosey.
We have discussed the opportunities potentially to earn income, but we have not done a study or gone to that step, Assemblymember Arvin. You know, I think that's the next step. We do think revenue can be earned on this project, and we think there's going to be a great demand. And so as we kind of look at the facility, we're certainly keeping that in mind for rental opportunities and other type of opportunities where we can raise some money to at least offset the costs of operation.
Is that all, Assemblymember Arvin?
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think maybe the time has come to have a more substantive discussion internally about the revenue generation forecasts, and I believe they will be significant over time, which is why I'm going to support this motion. And I think that we probably ought to take a look at what we might be able to do to supplement investment by the borough through an enterprise fund where those monies would be paid back over time to even expand the revenue stream potential for that development. So I would ask the body's support to direct the manager to begin those discussions internally with finance and others to start putting together some forecasts for us.
Thank you. You have that, Mr. Manager. Okay. Assemblymember Solomon.
Just to mention that I've listened to the comments by all, and I've counted the numbers, and I think I'd like to call for the question.
Is there objection to closing debate? Hearing none, debate is closed. Is there objection to, there has been objection to the motion, so we'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Assemblymember Culligan.
Yes.
Assemblymember Woods.
No.
Assemblymember Halter. Assemblymember Keough.
Yes.
Assemblymember Solomon.
Yes.
Assemblymember Arvin.
Yes.
Assemblymember Culver.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, it passed with Assemblymember Woods opposed.
Thank you. We've already had audience participation, and we now have the consent agenda before us. Nobody wanted anything pulled, so Assemblymember Keough.
I'd like to pull items B and C from the consent agenda resolutions.
The resolutions 12084 and 12085.
That's correct.
Okay. Assemblymember Culver.
Objection. Item B, serial number 12086, the B.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, Madam Clerk, would you read the rest into the record?
I sure will. We got resolution serial number 12-083, a resolution endorsing a planning effort and site selection for a regional wastewater treatment facility. Resolution serial number 12-087, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for Mascot Operating Assistance and authorizing the manager to enter into an agreement with Mascot regarding the use of the funds. Resolution serial number 12-088, a resolution approving a loan from the Fire Service Area Revolving Loan Fund, Fund 605, in the amount of $90,000 to the Caswell Lakes Fire Service Area, Fund 248, to provide the funds necessary to cover the costs of constructing the Caswell Lakes Fire Service Area's warm storage facility. With the company AM number 12-108, award of proposal number 12-134 to Wolverine Supply in an amount of $319,880 for constructing the Caswell Lakes Fire Service Area's warm storage facility. Resolution serial number 12-089, a resolution approving the pending $66,970.63 financial responsibility for the MV Susitna for an additional month. Resolution serial number 12-090, a resolution authorizing the manager to pursue a notice of availability listing in the Code of Federal Register, as well as listing the MV Susitna with the S&P Ship Brokers. AM number 12-107, award of proposal number 12-166 to Wolf Architecture in the amount of $821,254.10 for the Matsu Day School design. AM number 12-109, award of proposal number 12-132 to HDR Incorporated in an amount of $244,987.60 for the Big Lake Alaska Community Impact Assessment. AM number 12-110, award of proposal number 12-188 to Yulvis Soccer Land Services for the contract amount not to exceed $200,000 for real estate acquisition services. And that is it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Is there objection?
Mr. Mayor?
Did you want Darcy to move in?
Assemblymember Arvin, did I hear something?
Yeah, I'd like to divide the question, please.
What's that?
We already divided the question, but now what do you want to pull?
Resolution serial number 12-090.
090. Okay.
We actually need Darcy to put it on the floor first, and then we can take.
Yeah, there isn't a question to divide yet. So I'm going to ask Assemblymember Solomon to move the consent agenda, and then we'll divide it.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the consent agenda as read into the record by the clerk.
Thank you. Now, Assemblymember Arvin has requested to divide the question for 12-090. Is there objection to that? Hearing none, we will deal with the remainder of the consent agenda minus 12-090. Is there objection to the remainder of the consent agenda?
What's all been pulled so far?
We have pulled resolution 12-084, 12-085, and 12-086. And now we've divided the question on 12-090.
Okay, thank you.
So there's no objection to the consent agenda, so we'll go back and start with resolution 12-084. Madam Clerk, would you read that, please?
Mr. Mayor, we should really take up 12-090
first. That's right. Absolutely, since it's a motion already.
Yes.
Assemblymember Solomon, would you move that, please? It is moved.
It's already moved.
It is already moved, yes. So, Assemblymember Arvin, would you speak to that, please? And everybody else, turn your mic off, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, I guess I'm objecting to listing this on the Federal Register until we fully evaluate the costs of putting it on our beach. I would like to postpone this question until we get that other question answered about our willingness to spend some money on doing a study to figure out and design how to get it up on the barge dock at Port McKenzie and set aside, you know, the resolution just in front of this one is another $67,000 a month. So, you know, we're racking $67,000 a month keeping it in Ketchikan, and we were advised by the manager earlier tonight that we can have a detailed study for somewhere between $20,000 and $60,000 to find out definitively if we can, in fact, put it on the beach, which I'm sure that we can, and avoid some huge costs and maybe create another resolution for this vessel. So I'd like to move that we postpone this question until we get that detailed cost analysis question answered and the data that's resultant from that.
Okay, could you put a time on it, please? Mr. Manager, how much time would you need to study this?
I am, it's with a local company that is in the ship business, and the $20,000 to $60,000 we'll study on what it's going to cost us to put it on the beach. I do not know. I would guess it would take 3 weeks to a month tops, but I do not know. That is my guess. You know, my attempt here is to put a Band-Aid or a suture on these expenses going forward and to get us out of the obligation with FTA and also trying not to spend any additional money. So I would say the 20 to 60, and that's a wide range, and I understand that for information. I'm guessing a month, but I really do not know. It's just a guess.
So we do know that it would cost close to $250,000 just to get it up here. Mr. Manager?
Yes, that is incorrect. It will cost approximately $125,000 with staffing and fuel to get it here, another $125,000 to get it back to Ketchikan. So, but that was just the estimation by the examination from our port director. That would be the cost.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
So there's a motion on the floor to postpone until... So... August 21st, enough time, Mr. Manager? Just so we get a legal motion.
I would say that would be enough with the understanding that I want your thumbs up on spending the $20,000 to $60,000 for the study, being the assembly.
Yeah, well, that's going to have to be part of the consideration, I'm sure. Okay, so the motion on the floor is to postpone time certain August 21st, and then Assemblymember Woods, and then Assemblymember Halter, and then Assemblymember Cole.
Yeah, if I could ask the manager, please, if he has some sort of an estimate that what it would cost to bring the ferry up here and put it on the land to store it. Till we get a potential solution to our problem,
Mr. Manager.
Yes, sir. We anticipating the cost of bringing up to be $125,000, and that in a study will tell us number one if it can be put on the beach, and what it's going to cost to put us on the beach. So I don't have that answer yet, Mr. Woods. But we're anticipating the cost with the fuel and staffing to get it here to be $125,000.
Okay, then Assemblymember Halter. motion.
I don't understand why you couldn't go forward with the resolution as is to put it on the Federal Register and list this with a ship broker and still do a study of putting it on the beach. I mean, does one preclude the other? I guess my question is for the manager.
Mr. Manager?
It does not. Essentially, though, is a purpose to find, as spoken to by our port commissioner, Mr. Cruz, to find a use for it and put in the landings somehow in Anchorage and Port Mac. I could see that if that's the end game, then I could see at this point in time we would not want to list it with a broker. But you essentially could list it with a broker, and it could sell in a month, and then we would have spent the money on a study. But I have no assurances or any indication it won't sell in a month or a year, or I just do not know.
No. Well, maybe I got my questions for the maker of this, or who divided, Mr. Arvin. Is that where you're going, putting it on the beach so we could use it, according to Mr. Cruz, and build the landing? Is that where we're...
Mr. Arvin? Everybody turn your mics off, please.
Yeah, my fear is, being a little bit familiar with the Federal Register, you're opening that asset up to federal agencies across the country, and generally the status of an acquisition through that means is the taker will get the asset for little or no money. And so the probability is very high that there will be a taker for that, if but not for who knows what use. So if we want to give it away, that's a good way to do it. But we've got a short window here, and I'm not sure a month is adequate. It might be better to ask for that deliverable from the manager around mid-September. So I would postpone that question until the mid-September meeting. And let's figure out the costs. If we've got that, what we've talked about many times is if that ferry was sitting at Port McKenzie, it would be a catalyst to get some movement on additional funding and a landing site in Anchorage. And we have huge costs of storing it in Ketchikan. So let's avoid those costs. Let's see if we can do it, which I'm sure we can. Skyscrapers are moved, for God's sakes. A space shuttle is moved around. So surely we can pick that small vessel up and put it on the beach. Let's figure out what it's going to cost and wait until that information comes in. So we do anything drastic.
So we have a motion to amend the date to September 18th. Is there objection to that amendment? Okay, so the motion now is to postpone until time certain, September 18th, to allow time for the study. And the intent is to, well, that would obviously keep it from being listed in the meantime. So Assemblymember Culver, followed by Assemblymember Culligan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are so many more issues than we can take this up tonight under the consent agenda. We need an in-depth work session, and preferably before this September 18th date. You sent out a memo with all of this new information on possibly selling this boat, $500,000 request for all these repairs and outfitting, and when I just look at the cash that we're putting out monthly, we could have already moved the boat up here, and I'm not in favor of spending $20,000 to $60,000 to figure out if we can put it on the beach. We need to get somebody else doing cost estimates. We could put out a bid to Stevedore and Companies. What will you charge us, and how will you do it, and give us a proposal, put it on the beach, and here's our ship design, and that won't cost us anything until they do something. So we're going to spend $20,000 to $60,000 on a study to spend $100,000 more. We need a game plan, folks. This is punting this down the road and leaving it in Ketchikan. This is not a solution. We need to get a plan together. And it's not your fault, John. You inherited this thing, but we need a plan. I think we'd be better off financially if we can get it up here and secure it, either anchor it or beach it. But just a punt, you know, or a plan of putting it in service and what that entails. So I think a joint work session with the Port Commission and then another work session of just the Assembly, and we roll up our sleeves and we make some decisions.
Please speak.
I'm in favor of the postponement, but I'm saying before that we need these other, well, at least one, maybe two work sessions. This is an issue that has to be thrashed out, and we can't do it sitting up here in the middle of a regular meeting. We need more information. We need to be able to ask questions. We need a lot of things. We need to analyze this very, very in depth.
Thank you. Assemblymember Colligan.
I want to speak in favor of postponing this, but I this needs an engaging conversation. I appreciate the administration's work, and I know I've been pushing hard since last December to figure out this hairball and all the moving parts to try and come to some conclusion. We've made great strides. We've had communications with the FTA, whereas 4 or 5 months ago we didn't know what our solutions were and the like. We have presented in front of us at least 4 different opportunities of things to deal with the vessel. All of those opportunities require us to take ownership of the vessel, as I'm aware, and then we are responsible for that. The issue comes from a business decision is within each of those opportunities, how long do we hold or store the vessel before it gets transferred to another agency, it gets partnered with the private sector to put it into service, it gets transferred to the state of Alaska, or it gets just parked on the beach. All of those things have a timeline. Each one of those incurs a monthly opportunity, and the reality is one of those options is putting on the beach to stem our costs, because we don't know what that timeline is going to be, or we haven't analyzed for each one of those opportunities what the timeline is. I would like to vote to postpone this, but also figure out how to direct the manager, give him authority to spend without coming back to the Assembly this next couple weeks, to get the analysis done on what it's going to take to possibly move that out or move it somewhere else where it's less expensive as an interim measure. And at the same time, kind of move ahead of this hairball that's coming at us. We don't have a firm timeline on any of these, and we're going to incur costs no matter what. But I'd like to figure out how to figure out what our, if we can stem those costs or come up with a solution. But no matter what, I don't want the ship designer as one of the consultants on pulling that thing out of the water. Every trip we've been down, that has been a led us astray, I believe. So I would like an independent marine company that has experience to answer those questions. And but I would like to give the manager authority and a business direction to continue without us keeping to have public meetings. But this does need an engaging conversation. And there's at least 4 different options in front of us. But like I say, every one of them has a lead time. If we put it up for sale, it could be a year before it's sold. And at $70,000 a month, that's $700,000 if we could beach it for $300,000 or $400,000 ahead. I mean, there's different options, and I'd like to weigh all those. But anyway, thank you.
Mr. Manager, could you speak to the process going to the Federal Register?
Point of order, sir. The motion is to postpone, and it's on the floor.
That's true, but the manager...
I'll address the comments at the end.
Okay, he'll address it at the end. I think there was some disinformation that was given out about that, though. Okay, I detect that we are ready for the vote. Assemblymember Keogh.
Thank you. I've had my hand up for some time. Just a short comment here regarding the ferry. And I think there's 2 things that we know for certain about this boat. One is, we don't know where we're going. We've been groping around for some time. We've been making some headway, but we still don't know where we're going. That's a certainty, obviously. The other thing that we know for sure is that this is becoming an increasingly money-sucking experience. The cost to move the ferry, as stated by the manager, is $125,000. Our monthly fees for keeping the ship insured and running and staffed and secure in Ketchikan has now risen from $45,000 a month to $65,000 a month due to the increase, I believe, insurance fees, if I have that straight. Now we're looking at a $20,000 to $50,000 or $60,000 assessment of whether or not we can pull it out of the water. If we can, the associated costs of actually doing that, plus the costs of whatever it takes to maintain it, if and when it's here, and whether it's dry docked or not. So the costs have been significant, and they're rising. So that said, I guess I'm going to support the motion to postpone as well, unhappily.
Okay. Is there any objection to postponing? Hearing none, it is postponed till September 18th, and we now go back to items B and...
Mr. Mayor?
C, Assemblymember Colligan.
Was Mr. Moosey going to make some comments regarding that? I would like, if it's possible for us to address or give some authority to do some things rather than just keeping waiting. I would like us to make some direction if it's appropriate or let us know when it is appropriate during the meeting.
He's going to address that under manager comments at the end.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, can I request a short recess here? It's been a bit.
Okay.
Thank
let's
you.
Take 10.
Thank you.
We're up here, so that does give us a quorum. So we were ready to go back to the what's left of the consent agenda, Resolution 12-084. Madam Clerk?
A resolution to submit an advisory question to the qualified voters of the borough at the October 2nd, 2012, regular borough election to determine whether the public supports changing the regular election date from the first Tuesday in October to the first Tuesday in November.
Thank you. Assemblymember Keogh, would you move that, please?
I move resolution serial number 12-084, and I'd like to speak to it.
You may.
First a question and then a couple of comments. Through the mayor to... Oh, I'm sorry, that's a different item. Just a couple of comments, no question. This issue was before us about 3 months or so ago with the same intent in mind through an assembly action to change it. And I don't recall if we defeated it or the sponsor, Assemblymember Culligan, withdrew it at the time. But some of the same issues and concerns that we debated then are no different than they are now. And there are several issues. By making it a change, one is a matter of staffing for election officials, which will require, and I'm reading some of this off the document prepared by the clerk some 3 months ago when she posed questions to the state about elections, what the state's response was, and some of the issues that we might consider. One is election officials. Staffing will be a matter. So if we do make this change, that will require, and if it's on the same date in November, then that would require that we have both state and local government election officials manning 2 polling stations for each precinct. So one of the side effects of that is that it could require as much as recruiting approximately 152 new officials. Which is a large number of new people, and it's difficult at times to recruit an adequate number of folks for the elections that we have now. Another consideration is election equipment costs, which will require the purchasing of some sort of equipment and at a cost estimate of some... I think it's $133,000. Another side effect of having the same date would be delayed election results. I guess there are several issues addressed in this document by the clerk. As a reminder, too, I looked at this before, and there's only one local government in the entire state, whether it's a municipal or a city or borough government. Only one entity does that. And I guess, finally, I guess my last comment would be, like so many people, when the issue first arose, I thought, oh, that's a no-brainer. That makes sense. Let's combine election dates so we don't have an election in October and an election in November. But I think it's problematic in several ways, so I am going to be voting against this resolution.
Thank you. I would remind everybody, though, the question before us tonight isn't whether to change the election date. The question tonight is whether to let the voters vote on it.
Mr. Mayor?
Assemblymember Culver is next, and then Assemblymember Solomon. I meant Cullian.
Must have meant Culliver. It's interesting, at best, to listen to the blogosphere professionals and others describe this resolution as a action to change the election date. It is a vote of the people, and I'm curious that some people think that they know better than the people might know what might be best and convenient for them. My intent in putting this forward was to ask, and I did withdraw that last one rather than voting on it, was put to a vote of the people on if it's something they are interested in, and would it be more convenient for them. And I realize that there's plenty of rabbit holes to jump down of technical issues, including working with the state, and the like, and equipment and workers. But even if you added those up and added several thousand more hours, even at our pitiful voter turnout of 25,000 people, and it takes them a half hour or an extra hour to go vote, they may be interested, and there's a cost of them transporting and other stuff. And there's many other states that have one election day, and there's actually two places in the state that actually do vote on one election day. This initiative or this resolution is to put it in front of the people, to let the people decide whether it's important or not. And if it's important, then we can work with the state or others to see if we want to address it. My personal issue is October is a inconvenient and confusing time when there's an election in November. An alternate might be to move it to April. But this resolution, and what I'm asking to vote for, is to put it to a vote of the people, to let the people decide what their preference or interest is. Is it important to them or not? And let them make that decision rather than us force that upon them and the like. And right now we're in the midst of several, two state elections and then our local elections. And this would, if we had this in place, would make it so there's just a primary and a general election. And there's all sorts of red herrings you could throw out on the table, but simply put, this is a resolution to ask the people if this is important or not important. And if it doesn't come with a better than 60% response, then I assume it's not that important and probably shouldn't be pursued. But if it comes back with a 60 or better percent response, then we should look at alternatives. Change it to the same day in November, change it to April so we're aligned with other South Central communities. But I think it should be dealt with and should be looked at. There's been all sorts of questions about equipment and the like. The state is getting ready to replace all of their equipment as well. Whether we handle the election and other stuff, to me, are wrestling between authorities and the clerks and the like. And they do have legitimate concerns, but I also think that they could also be worked out. And this is just merely, again, a question in front of the people. Is it something you support or are interested in or not? Thank you.
Assemblymember Solomon.
Good Yes, I'm going to speak in opposition to this resolution for the following reason. The Assembly did, in fact, vote on this, and we the Assembly voted it down. This seems to be a backdoor approach to trying to put it back before the people in an initiative form, and I believe Ms. Bettini spoke out, or one of the speakers earlier tonight, there's no motion of this nature from the people to the Assembly. This comes from an Assembly member back to the people through the Assembly, and I think the Assembly spoke once. We said no. Now it's back before us, and I don't think government's jobs is to go out and say, I wonder if the people would like to vote on this. Let's put it before them to see if they want to vote. My contention is if the people want to vote on this particular issue, they will create a petition initiative, bring it before the Assembly, and we will vote on the approval of it at that time, not to create an idea in their minds already about something that apparently is not of great interest to them because it's not before us from them, but before us as the Assembly as a point that we've already refused. So I vote for that reason and all the other reasons. I just don't think that we need to go to the people and ask for initiative votes. They elected us to handle that for them.
Further discussion? Assemblymember Colbert.
We don't have an answer to the logistics questions of pulling off this, and we have different issues too than the state. And I think where we saw last November when we had the contested U.S. Senate race, how loud that election was, and you didn't hear much about the other races, even the gubernatorial race. And so I guess the concern is that we have local issues that need local focus, and to be lost in the noise of all the presidential, the state offices, all this, the local issues, there will be no room at in the debate tables on the airwaves for the public to be focused on it. Then the newsprint. We have a better chance of getting our message out on what our issues are so that people can respond, just like the folks that showed up tonight on their tax issues. We got it. We heard it. We're more responsive that way. I think it works better for our local-level grassroots democracy. If we want to change the date to another date, I think it's important to kind of keep it within ownership of this government rather than absorbed in another one, and we don't know those issues that would be resolved. So if we don't know the answer to the question ourselves, why would we go to the voters with it yet? We don't know the logistical hoops. So I'd like to support my colleague Colgan when I can, but on this one I just think it's kind of an institutional issue.
Assemblymember Halter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And with all due respect to Mr. Culligan, I think it's really important that the borough maintain a separate identity and a separate voting time and place. I personally like October. Maybe April 1st is better. But I think some of our issues, whether or not we have the highest voter turnout or not, but I think some of our issues need separate thought, separate time, and combining them with state issues, combining them with state elections, I think just kind of dilutes it. Maybe the theory is that the number of voters will be up, but I still don't buy that. I think it's really important, and all party politics aside, whether it be Democrat or Republican, I think we should be more neutral and more select, and I'd like to have the voters take a real close look at our road bonds and our school bonds and really analyze them on a separate election. And we'd have to change the terms of the assembly members. I think we'd have to go from 3 to 4 years to kind of get in the step with the sink of a 2-year election and things like that. There's a lot of little things that wouldn't show up on a ballot measure, you know. I think the total cost and things like that, it'd be hard to really put it out there for information. I guess you could do it somehow, but I think we're better off just having a separate election, keeping it that way. It's worked in the past and should work in the future. But generally, as a general rule, I would not be opposed to having voters decide certain things, but I think this is something that we better think about a lot, and I personally is opposed to it.
Assemblymember Culligan.
I'd like to propose an amendment to my own resolution, serial number 12-084. And for a advisory question to the qualified voters of the borough at the October 2nd, 2012 regular borough election to determine whether the public supports changing the regular election date from the first Tuesday in October to the first Tuesday in April.
Okay, there's a motion to amend. Any discussion? Assemblymember Halter.
Maybe I'd like to hear from the clerk on what changes would that cost and things like that. I mean, is there a significant level going by dates like that? I mean, your analysis that you presented on going to the state election, would there be a separate analysis that we'd need now?
Madam Clerk.
To Assemblymember Halter, through the mayor, since this wouldn't be joining up with the state election where we share the same election officials and we use the state's equipment, the only thing that I could see us doing is maybe sending out some type of, once it happens, sending out a reminder after the election that we're going to an April election. I don't believe that this would, the cost wouldn't be the associated the same, no.
Speaking on the amendment, Assemblymember Keel. Oh, you done, Assemblymember Halter?
Well, I'll jump in here. I was wondering if Mr. Culligan would entertain that at that election on April 1st, that Assembly members sit for one term, only six-year term.
We will consider that as a humorous comment. Assemblymember Keogh.
Through the mayor to the attorney, if we were to make a if we passed this amendment and the initiative came forward, the voters voted yes on advisory vote, and we later decided to go along with an April election date, what kind of implications that would that have for folks in elected office like the mayor and members of the assembly? What other kind of statutory or title, how would that affect the way we administer things, or how would that affect our borough code? What changes would we have to make?
Mr. Attorney.
There would obviously, sitting right here right now, I couldn't tell you all of them, but a couple of things that pop into mind are, we do have three-year terms. We're limited to two full consecutive terms. There is a state law specifically on point that says an assembly member's term may not be shortened during the time of office. So after this October election, if the assembly decided to move to an April election, what you'd probably have to do then is by ordinance extend the term for whoever's up next past October of 2013 into April of 2014 to start the cycle, because you couldn't back up next year's election. You'd have to take 2013 and kick it to 2014 because you were specifically prohibited from shortening terms. Other than that, you know, the deadlines are set in terms of dates prior to the election, in terms of notices, filing, candidacy, notices, all that stuff. The only other issue that would happen would be we'd have to pre-clear the date with the Department of Justice. The clerk's office is on top of all that stuff. And that's all I can think of right now would be the term issue.
Thank you. Are we ready for the question? Assemblymember Colbert.
Perhaps if we waited till the next meeting to act on this amendment, we'd have the information that the last two questions had had. I would move to postpone with the amendment pending to our next regularly scheduled meeting to take this up and ask staff to provide us with some, what would that mean? What would that look like if we made that change?
If the policy was enacted. Motion to postpone, time certain, August 7, right? Is there objection?
Just a quick
on the motion to postpone, Assemblymember Keel.
Just a matter of through the mayor to the clerk. Does that do we have time to do that? I mean, would be over the limit to over the time limit to bring forward a no? We'd be good. Okay, thanks.
Through the mayor to Assemblymember Keel, we have until August 10th to adopt any propositions for the ballot.
And I do object, Mayor.
Okay, there is objection on the motion to postpone. So, Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Assemblymember Halter. If you guys can turn on your mics, that would be great.
Yes.
Thank you. Assemblymember Keough.
Yes.
Assemblymember Salmon.
Yes.
Assemblymember Arvin.
Yes.
Assemblymember Culver.
Yes.
Assemblymember Colligan.
No.
Assemblymember Woods.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, it passed with Assemblymember Colligan opposed.
Okay. Moving on to Resolution 12-085. Madam Clerk.
It's the resolution opposing ballot measure 2, establishment of the Alaska Coastal Management Program.
Assemblymember Keough, would you move that, please?
I move resolution serial number 12-085.
Do you want to speak to it?
Yes, I do. A question and a comment. First, a question through the mayor to the attorney. Since this is a voter initiative, it's already scheduled for an election. Are there any APOC considerations by a local government making a vote endorsing or, in this case, opposing a voter initiative? Is that a consideration at all? Are there any?
Mr. Attorney?
APOC? Not that I'm aware of.
Or any other consideration? Perhaps while you think about that, I'll make a couple of comments.
The only thing that pops into my head would be there is a prohibition on a municipality spending money for or against a ballot proposition. So I interpret that to mean going out and, you know, writing campaigns or taking ads out or doing public service announcements or things like that. But this would be, in my opinion, a legislative-type action here that the borough is saying they either do or do not support it at the policy level because it's a good or a bad thing. It is a statewide initiative. I think it would be a different question if it was a local initiative.
Okay. So if I can continue with a comment.
You can.
Alaska's coastal program operated successfully for over 30 years. In 2011, the legislature and the governor failed to agree on conditions for extending the coastal program, and the program expired. Now Alaska is the only coastal state without a coastal management program, and we have by far and away the longest. Our coastline is longer than the rest of the coasts of the coastal states of the United States combined. So why is coastal management important? It essentially empowers Alaskans in federal decisions that impact our coast. So rather than being subordinate to the federal government, coastal management gives Alaskans direct influence in federal permitting decisions. The state can adopt policies for the coastal values we want to manage and protect. I would take issue with some of the whereases in the resolution, inferring or stating that it stops or delays development projects. And I think if we have one, when we had one, coastal management identifies and resolves potential conflicts between coastal resource uses that allows development to proceed with fewer hurdles. I guess I could go on, I think, but I would also finally point out that this is this voter initiative has wide support throughout Alaska. It's supported by 39 mayors, 6 boroughs, the Alaska State Senate President, Representative Gary Stevens, an assortment of organizations and boroughs. So I guess I have to say that I speak in opposition to this resolution that opposes this voter initiative that we would have a coastal zone management plan.
Assemblymember Culligan.
Well, I'm pleased to be able to speak to speak to my own resolution here. The reason I brought this forward is not that I am for or against coastal zone management. I am against the way it's being proposed and the lack of definition. This is not the reintroduction of the previous coastal zone management. And I wish this was more in the form of a question to people to figure out how important this is statewide and by state area to give our legislature direction on how to address and deal with coastal zone management. But that's not what this is. And although I appreciate that 39 mayors and 6 borough mayors, et cetera, they're all coastal mayors that have individual votes on this panel that's not yet appointed, that has a bunch of unresolved, undefined things to be determined. Kind of like, it reminds me of some federal bills that were approved that were undefined and rolled out the details later, that we're South Central Alaska, half the population has one vote. And for or against coastal zone management, I believe that through this ballot measure is a ill-conceived, poor way to do this. And we should be giving, I was hoping it would be an advisory vote to give our legislature some direction, put a fire under them to deal with it and wrangle out the details that were unresolved session before last, before we were bathed in other sorts of oil and gas tax and other drama. And there's tons of technical reasons, but the overriding one is I just don't think the ballot initiative is the appropriate place. And it has severe consequences against the borough, 40 miles inland. It affects almost all the lakes and rivers and streams of the borough, the way it's defined. And there's a bunch of stuff in this version, not reinventing or reintroducing the old coastal zone management. In this instance, this ballot measure, a bunch of stuff is undefined and is not the same as a previous coastal zone, and I would ask your support to send a message that it affects the borough through a ballot initiative, and I'd like to redirect our legislature to make it a priority to actually vet all of the issues to deal with coastal zone management. But when there's a board of 13 and half our population, including the MATSU, has only one voice on that board, and there's a ton of things that are undefined or unresolved, we have serious concerns with it, or we should have serious concerns with it, and I'd ask people to vote in favor of this resolution.
Are we ready for the question? Oh, Assemblymember Woods, I'm sorry.
I was at a meeting here a few days ago when I reiterated Steve Culligan's opposition to this because one half the population of the state of Alaska would have only one vote out of 13. And I was reaffirmed that position when Palmer Mayor Delina Johnson was at a state organization of mayors, and this question was brought up. And because MATSU and the Anchorage Borough and Kenai would be joined with the Aleutian area by There were five mayors there that opposed this because of lack of representation. There were 85 mayors total there. Not all of them were present, but there was only five no votes to passing, which happened to be our local mayors. And that shows that perhaps I'm misstating, but some prejudice as to allowing us any opportunity to comment on our local core problems here along the Cook Inlet, with we know one huge item coming up is the Beluga Whale Endangered Species Act, and where we will not have a vote. And so I support this wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Are we ready for the question? I've heard objections, so Madam Clerk, would you, first of all, let's clarify, are you still there, Assemblymember Arvin? I guess that was my answer. Madam Clerk?
I have one question, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just, I guess maybe for the borough attorney. So this ballot measure is going to be on this fall state ballot, and we would just be telling the people of the Mat-Su Borough, we're as assembly are don't want you to vote for this ballot measure. Is that the gist of this legally?
I think legally the gist of this is the Mat-Su Borough is taking a position on whether or not they think this is a good law to be enacted or not.
Not the assembly. Not that should or should not be on the ballot.
Correct. It's on the ballot.
It's on the ballot.
It's done.
Right. This has nothing to do with the state ballot, but it will be a policy call that will go into the record that's taking testimony right now on the state level.
One more question, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
If this ballot measure passes, the state legislature could change that ballot, change the terms of this law, or they could or could not?
For 2 years. Well, there is a state law that says that the effect cannot be modified or negated for 2 years at the local level. The state law on the subject reads something the same, but there have been lawsuits in the past where an initiative was passed and the legislature changed the law. Somewhat, the allegations were somewhat substantially, and those cases were unsuccessful. So the legislature would have some room to change it once it's passed. The question is how much.
Okay. Thank you.
We're trying to get Assemblymember Ron back. And the clerk.
I guess, do I have one more?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe for Mr. Colligan. Is it your intent by this to, you plain don't want to have a coastal management plan, or you want to have something better written?
So I'm not for or against a coastal management plan, and there was a coastal management system in place. This is not reenacting the previous coastal management. This is a different set of procedures and the like, and it's through an initiative rather than the legislature and both sides compromising, defining exactly what that is. There's a bunch of stuff in this that is undefined to then be vetted out without the legislature to determine what all those details are over a two-year period and the like. I would rather, I think it's more appropriate that our legislature take this up, vet it, and through the traditional process in a heated discussion and either reconstitute the previous coastal zone management or not. And Noel talked about the conference of mayors. That decision, where they were overridden, was at the end of the session trying to get the legislature to address the then existing coastal zone management program as it existed and not let it sunset. This is a completely different issue, which we're completely left out of.
But you got to kind of appreciate the fact that some of those coastal villages and cities felt like the legislature wasn't moving on it, just let the old coastal management plan go under.
You've got to appreciate the fact that there's local input, local process. What I don't appreciate is the fact that a bunch of this is not the same exact system. It's not that well defined, and I think it's kind of a strange area to be then handing it over to a board that we have no control over that affects us greatly versus through the legislative process addressing and reenacting, or the governor reenacting. I wish this was, like I said before, a vote of the people to say by community how important this was, so that there was a measure to light a fire under a few people to reenact the existing coastal zone management or not.
Just for the record, Assemblymember Culligan, the old coastal management plan had been shut down. This vote that's been referred to, the ambush that took place at the mayor's conference, was an effort to get the existing legislature to reintroduce something before the end of the session.
And I'm sorry, you're right. And they did. I think our mayors were upset because they used organization money to help promote and support this was the issue. Thank you.
Let's take 5 minutes here to see if we can get things back together.
I have a comment.
Assemblymember Keel.
Since we can continue a few more minutes on the debate here, the fact of the matter is, the for whatever reason, the legislature didn't renew or enact new legislation. We have no coastal zone management plan. And I see this initiative, if it passes, which I'm very sure that it will pass, irrespective of what action we take here tonight, will reestablish it, whether it's precise or clear or vague, as been suggested. The legislature will have the opportunity to fix it, repair it, sharpen it, and I presume that they will. So this, I see it as a way for the voters to push the legislature into action on this important issue.
I think we should have everybody in the state then be a legislator. The legislature was elected to
make
the motions and to act in the interest of the people.
Yeah, I'm on the other line.
I hate these initiatives. Take action. Pull the trigger.
Okay, Assemblymember Arvin, are you back online?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Very good. Okay, we were going to take a break, but we're now ready to vote on the Coastal Management Zone resolution. And there is objection, and so as soon as the clerk gets here, she's going to take the vote.
Assemblymember Keough.
No.
Assemblymember Salmon.
Yes.
Assemblymember Arvin.
Yes.
Assemblymember Culver.
Yes.
Assemblymember Culligan.
Yes.
Assemblymember Woods.
Yes.
Assemblymember Halter.
I guess I'll go no on this one and let the people vote their way they want to vote without us saying anything.
Mr. Mayor, this passed with Assemblymember Keough and Halter opposed.
Okay. Madam Clerk, Resolution 12-086.
A resolution establishing fees at the Brett Memorial Ice Arena, the Palmer and Wassel Pools, the Borough Libraries, Borough Gym, Park Facilities, and the Community Enrichment Program.
Assemblymember Culver, do you want to move that?
I move resolution serial number 12-086 and I have an amendment on page 3 of 7 of the resolution to replace the $40 per hour Borough Gym rental fee and take it back to its previous rate of $25 an hour. We had testimony tonight on that, and so I think that's reasonable.
Okay, Mr. Manager.
Can I make a suggestion? I certainly understand the speaker, and with that event, what we're trying to do is cover some of our costs with the cleanup and that sort of thing. Could we keep it at 40 but give them 3 hours? I mean, that will allow us to clean it up and do that sort of thing. So in that event, if we would do it at $25 an hour for 3 hours, it would be $75. But if we do 0 to 3 hours for $40, that would be less expensive and allow us up front to cover our costs, or some of our costs.
So the maker of the motion amenable to that?
I'm kind of confused. Why 3 hours, $25 rate?
No, you'd be $40 for 3 hours.
With a 3 hour minimum.
A youth team, typically their practice is an hour. So I don't know. I'm going to stick with the amendment. Let the members vote on that. If somebody else wants to change it or secondarily amend it, fine. But I don't think it's used that heavily anyway. I don't think it's going to be a big fiscal impact.
Mr. Manager,
We have no heartburn with that.
Mr. Mayor,
Assemblymember Arvin.
Yeah, although I appreciate the manager's comment there in an effort to reduce the longer use times, but that would be a sweeping increase to all the hour user groups that use those facilities. So I support Jim's amendment.
Okay. Remember, we're talking about one of our economic engines here. Not that it would ever happen in skiing, but so is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, it passes. We have before us the resolution as amended. Is there objection? Hearing none, it passes, and we finally are done with the consent agenda, which brings us to new business, and the manager wanted to pull 12-099, is that right?
089. Is it
099?
I'm sorry, it is.
12-099, number 5 in your program.
Okay.
I'm going to pull it completely off the agenda.
Yes.
Okay. Is there objection? Hearing none. Matt? Would you read the introductions, please?
These are for public hearing on August 7th, Ordinance Serial Number 12-095, Resolution Serial Number 12-091, Resolution Serial Number 12-092, Ordinance 12-096, Ordinance 12-097 with Resolution 12-093, Ordinance 12-098, Ordinance 12-100, Ordinance 12-101, Ordinance 12-102, Ordinance 12-103, and for public hearing on August 21st, Ordinance 12-092, Ordinance 12-093, and Ordinance 12-094.
Assemblymember Solomon.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I move to introduce the legislation as read into the record by the clerk and set the public hearings for August 7th, 2012, and August 21st, 2012, respectively.
Is there objection? Assemblymember Colbert. Use your mic, please.
Sorry about that. We're still getting used to this. Item number 8, 12-102, accepting and appropriating $150,000 legislative grant to a fire service area. I'm just wondering, why don't we have that bundle that the school district's looking for of all their small projects, that we just put it all in one, accept and appropriate it, give it to the district to manage the $20,000 and $50,000 projects, and I think that's kind of what they were looking for, is us to kick it out quicker and not sit on the money that they want to get those library books and technology improvements and the things that the legislators have funded them. So that's a question for the administration.
Could you look into that, Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor and Assembly, that is in the process of being kicked to them anyways. It's in the middle of that actually happening. So it's not started. We're already in the process of that occurring. And we will get it to them as soon as we can, correct?
You have to take it up next time. We can't talk about the merits of the case right now. This is just introduction.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to speak on that issue.
involved, Mr. Mayor?
Assemblymember Colbert.
Does that require assembly action to accept and appropriate and transfer the funding authority or the money over to their treasury?
We can bring that up next time. We're really off target here, Assemblymember Colbert. Is there any objection to the introductions? Hearing none, they are passed. Assemblymember Solomon, the vacancy report.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the mayor's confirmations this evening as follows. To the Emergency Medical Services Board, Jennifer Hales. To the Parks, Recreation, and Trails Advisory Board, the removal of Fred Miller.
Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, passes. Please turn your mic off, Assemblymember Solomon. So, we are ready for comments. We'll start with you, Mr. Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to discuss briefly our favorite issue. All our attempts as staff has been to stop the cost of the ferry and to move it into a happier home. The reason we're doing that, and it came up tonight, is we're trying to have the ferry used by some other entity or taken by some other entity to stop the monthly costs. With the understanding that putting in the landings would be expensive that we would not have the funding for, and also, too, with the FTA. We received $12.5 million from FTA. $8.5 million was pretty much assigned to the boat. FTA has told us that if we put it out for sale, regardless of what the sale was, as long as they felt it was market, we made our best effort, that whatever we received, the money would go back, but if it was short of the $8.5 million, that would blunt our obligation to them. Also, too, if it would be used by a public federal entity. Now, this is where the question came up. We do not anticipate if it's put on that list, somebody would grab it. The borough does not anticipate receiving a dime for that. However, that would mitigate our $8.5 million we owe to FTA. So that was a financial the financial deal. So FTA said if you sell it, if it go through process and we're part of it, that would mitigate the $8.5 million. If it goes on the federal list and somebody takes it, that would mitigate the $8.5 million, and that was the attempt that I was making and trying to do so. Tomorrow morning, I have staff meeting with the governor's staff to see if the Alaska Marine Highway can use this on a long-term or take-it basis. That also, I believe, would mitigate the $8.5 million cost, but that would not result in any money coming back to the borough. And that has been my attempt for the past 5 or 6 months, but now I'm hearing that we need to, this is a valuable asset, and we need to take advantage of this for the service. So I want you to know that's the direction I was heading, and I'm hoping to get kind of clarification. Am I going in both directions, or am I changing direction? And then the second comment I have with the $20,000 to $60,000 to do the study, I have authority to do so, but I'm chicken and don't want to do that on my own, and I want the Assembly to weigh in.
Mr. Attorney, comments?
Please do not comment on me being a chicken.
No. I have no comments. Thank you.
Madam Clerk.
I just wanted to thank the Assembly again earlier for the evaluation.
Thank you. So let's start at on the west and go all the way to the east. Assemblymember Solomon.
I'm on the west, huh? I don't know. I'm confused in here. It makes it easy to evaluate someone like our clerk when they do such an incredible job as our clerk does, and appreciate everything she does for us and has done for us and will continue to do for us. I'm also appreciative of the assembly moving 12-dash the Big Lake money for their survey study. I forget the number right now, but it's been a long time, and it's time that they got that moving forward. And I thank you for that, and thank you for your evening, and hope you all have a safe trip home.
No comment.
I would like to see that Whittier landing that Dave Cruz was talking about, either pictures and drawings or let's go down there and take a look at it. He's saying that they built a fairly substantial landing for $1 million. I don't know if we ever take that boat out of the water, if that's such a good idea myself.
Assemblymember Woods.
I don't like this setup either. We've got to push these buttons all the time.
You're still on. Assemblymember Woods.
Thank you, and I really appreciate the no vote on this coastal zone management proposed, because I was appalled by the lack of the Senate to uphold the current coastal zone management plan that we had formerly, and with whatever changes they wanted to put in. So, but other than that, really do appreciate the staff work here, and good night.
Assemblymember Culligan.
I just want to take a few minutes to address our favorite subject, the ferry, for the manager. This is a complex issue, business issue, and we have losses and are bleeding no matter what we do, and I think we need to act quickly. I want to make sure that you are assured that you have the authority to investigate the four or five options we have and establish a realistic time frame scenario for each one of those, so that we have a kind of a list of opportunities and know how those decisions were made. I agree with you that our mission is stemming those losses. Right now we're bleeding like heck, and to have to go to every assembly meeting to come back, you know, month after month, versus taking some action, knowing what the direction is, I think I just want to get some direction from the body that I think we're clear in our direction as far as trying to mitigate some of our costs. But we have four or five opportunities. And I, even if we want to transfer it to the state, or I mean, I'm interested in what some of those opportunities are, but if we wanted to put it into service, for instance, that's going to take till next spring at best to negotiate an agreement. And we have several months of storage. So my interest is, depending on what opportunity really comes to fruition, we have a plan in the short term to stem our losses. So instead of costing us $700,000, you know, 10 months at $70,000, that we have a know that we're going to put it on shore or something as an alternative for $300,000 and pay that right now and stem our losses, or do we have an opportunity to transfer something? But I'd like to see the evaluation done on each one of those kind of a time frame decision points of where we're headed. But I also don't want to micromanage and step in the way of this thing. We need to get going on it, and hope you rather than being chicken, have the confidence that. It needs to be addressed just from a pure business decision and figure out how to make that happen, and that is our overall goal.
Assemblymember Colbert.
Yeah, I'd like to see the administration implement the initiative that the assembly, the directive the assembly passed, where we can initiate the cost accounting. For instance, we appropriated a contract, or we approved a contract for a consultant to provide right-of-way services. And I think that's what started me on that mission, was that when I looked at the funding, it was just out of the general fund capital budget. So the folks that were here tonight that were had their homes foreclosed were paying for projects. We weren't billing it to the project. You know, if we're going to have somebody consultant working on acquiring right-of-way and it's for a road service project, the road service needs to pay for it. If it's for the road bonds need to pay for it. Let's not just run everything through the capital budget and the general fund, and let's establish the policy And let's start time coding our timesheets, and let's bill the proper accounts. Thank you. Good meeting. Good to see you, Cindy. Thanks for coming out. We miss you. It's just when he sends us an email now, it's gents. And it's not as much fun.
Thank you. Unfortunately, Cindy doesn't get to make comments anymore, not at the end. Assemblymember, my deputy mayor does, though. Assemblymember Arvin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess first I move to reconsider ordinance serial number 12-089 and set it for the mid-September meeting.
It was resolution 089 on postponing the ferry.
No, no, ordinance serial number.
Oh, the foreclosures. Okay. Okay. There's a motion to reconsider on the floor. So, without going into a lot of discussion, is there objection to reconsidering that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, there's a lot of objection. So, Madam Clerk, do you want to vote on it?
Assemblymember Salmon.
No to the reconsideration.
Assemblymember Arvin.
Yes.
Assemblymember Culver. Assemblymember Culligan,
no.
Sorry. Assemblymember Woods.
No.
Assemblymember Halter.
Maybe no.
Maybe no or no. Assemblymember Keough.
No.
Mr. Mayor, it failed with Assemblymember Arvin in favor.
Thank you, Assemblymember Arvin, for trying. Now, your comments.
Well, not very happy taking people out of their houses today. I think that
can't hear him.
We can't hear you, Assemblymember Arvin. The clerk's mic was on. Sorry. Could you repeat it?
Yeah, I don't feel good about what we did with that piece of legislation tonight. There were some unanswered questions. And I would request, although, Lonnie, you do a stellar job, and I hold you in high regard, but I would, in fact, ask that you listen to the tape, because I don't think that you asked for the vote on the amended 12-089. I think it moved Mr. Salmon's amendment, but the main motion I don't think carried. But if you could get back with me on that, I'd appreciate it.
I can do that.
We'll check that. Okay. We won't need to extend the meeting. I'm really wondering if we don't need a work session on the ferry. I've heard some surprising divergence tonight, that some of which makes no sense if we're not going to use it as a ferry. And if that's our intent, then yeah, we should keep it around. But I guess that's something the manager can arrange if he's clearer about what we're doing than I am. I think we're really well, Mr. Manager, would you tell me if you've got a clear idea where we're going?
Yes, sir, I can tell you. I'm going both directions. I'm looking to mitigate the costs and looking for opportunities for the boat at the same time. So yes, I was heading completely one way, and we'll kind of examine the other, and we will get a cost on how much it's going to take to bring it up and put it here, with the study and what it's going to take to do it, and then also put it back in the water. And then the implications on, let's just say somebody wants to purchase it, how quickly, you know, we need to kind of get that ready or actually put it back to kind of so they can show it and test it out, you know, that sort of thing. So we'll work on it. We do have some more time, but time is also money. Somebody said that before, didn't they? Time is money.
I think our attorney talked about time and money. So I would like to thank Assemblymember Solomon for filling in for me this afternoon on the special meeting. It was one of those rare summer days when I could actually make hay. Because of tonight's meeting, we, of course, missed Cheryl Hines' ceremony. Sorry about that. But and during the meeting, I got word that my own 15-month-old nephew had passed away in Providence. So it's not been a happy time the last week or so. Anyway, that's the end of our business, and we will adjourn unless there's an objection.